Could all members please switch their phones to silent for the duration of the meeting? And please could I also remind you to turn on your microphones when speaking for recording purposes. Thank you. Item agenda on the one. Minutes, annual council meeting on the 18th of July 2018. Is it the wish of the council that I sign the minutes of the annual council meeting held on 18th of July 2018 as an accurate record, subject to Councillor Amanda Lloyd-Harris being noted as having given a maiden speech? Item number two, apologies for absence. Are there any apologies for absence?
Madam Mayor, there are apologies for absence from Councillors David Morton and Rebecca Harvey, and there are apologies for lateness from Councillor Coleman, and Councillor McMillan.
Thank you. Item number three, Mayor's announcements. I have no announcements, so we move to the next item. Item four, declarations of interest. Are there any declarations of interest by councillors? Yes.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I need to declare a significant interest with respect to special motion number 6.11. I'm a director of the Brightwells Multi Academy Trust, which members will know encompasses Fulham Primary School, Sullivan, and Queen's Manor. I am also chair of the finance committee at that school and chair of governors at Fulham Primary School.
Thank you. Anyone else? Oh, right.
Declare non-pecuniary interest as I'm a governor of Wimmold Park Primary School.
Thank you.
I just want to declare I'm a governor at Flora Gardens Primary School and a member of the finance committee.
Thank you.
Yes. I want to declare that I'm also a governor at Flora Gardens Primary School.
Thank you. Councillor.
Sorry, I declare an interest as Chair of Governors of the Good Shepherd Primary School.
As Governor of Hallenham Academy.
I'm a school governor of Blackberry School.
Thank you.
I'm a governor at St John the 23rd Catholic Primary School and vice chair of governors.
Thank you.
And I'm a governor at Fulham Cross Academy Trust.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm a governor at St John's Fulham Primary School.
Thank you.
I'm a governor of Melcombe Primary School and sit on the Finance Committee.
Madam Mayor, I'm a governor at Fulham Cross as well. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm a governor at Laminia Primary School.
I'm a governor at Wood Lane High, where I'm the Chair of Governors, and also at William Morris, where I sit on the Finance Committee.
Thank you. That's brilliant. Thank you. Right. Item 5.1, adoption of the Council's revised statement of gambling policy 2019 to 2022. I call upon the leader, Councillor Stephen Cowan, to move the report and recommendations.
Formally moved.
Is the report and its recommendations agreed as amended? I declare the report and recommendations as amended. Carried. Thank you. Item six.
Mayor. Understanding order 15E3, I move that special motions 5, 9, 4, 9, 5, 6, 7, and 11 take order of preference on the agenda. This means that special motions will be debated in the following order. First, special motion number one. Second, special motion number four. Third, special motion number nine. Fourth, special motion number five. Fifth, special motion number six. Sixth, special motion number seven. 7, special motion number 11. 8, special motion number 2. 9th, special motion number 3. 10th, special motion number 8. And 11th, special motion number 10.
Thank you. Did you all take notes?
Formally second.
That's good. Brilliant. Thank you. No, Madam Mayor, if you don't mind.
Oh, sorry.
Under the same standing order, I also wish to move an amendment to that, in that special motion number 3 should take precedence after special motion number 1. This is a motion that has already been carried over from the last meeting and is a matter of great concern to the residents of Lannoy and Hartop.
Thank you. Could you just give me a moment? Thank you. Can we put this to the vote, please? Those in favour? And the amendment?
Of the amendment.
You put the amendment?
Yes, the amendment.
We voted against the amendment.
Yes.
So they're against.
Those in favour of the amendment.
So those in favour, please.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Those against? And those not voting? Thank you. 10-4 and 30 against. I declare the motion carried. Or not carried, I beg your pardon, sorry. Well, that was new.
That's fair. So we now move to the substantive motion.
We now move to the substantive motion. Those in favour? Those against? And those not voting? 31 for and 11 against. So the motion is carried. Thank you. Right. Item 6.1, special motion 1. Happy birthday, NHS. I call on Councillor Ben Coleman and Councillor Patricia Quigley to move and second.
Formally seconded.
Thank you. I call on Councillor Coleman and Councillor Quigley to speak for the administration. Please note that this will be Councillor Quigley's maiden speech. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Well, let me start with the good news, besides the fact that I managed to get here in time. The really good news for us all is that despite everything thrown at it, Madam Mayor, the NHS has reached its 70th birthday this year. And that Charing Cross Hospital, the other piece of good news, is celebrating its 200th birthday this month. And, of course, the other good piece of good news, which I'm sure you'll be delighted to hear, and you know already, is that residents have chosen overwhelmingly to keep a Labour administration in power which is committed to fighting to save the hospital. So... Madam Mayor, this is quite a long motion, but it centres around a simple concept, the facts. And the first fact is that Charing Cross Hospital is still under threat. In 2012, as you may know, just 2 years into the Coalition Government's austerity programme, Health Secretary Jeremy Hunt signed off on a document, and it was called Shaping a Healthier Future. This document is still being supported in 2018 by the new Health Secretary, Matt Hancock, who you see mentioned in the motion. The plan remains. It remains to replace the hugely busy A&E with a smaller urgent care centre. It remains to sell off 87% of the site and lose 300, or perhaps all, the acute care beds. And the plan also remains to replace what is one of the best acute hospitals in London with a series of effectively urgent care centres, a series of clinics, which are going to be branded, rebranded, something that's never been heard of before, a local hospital. The fact is that as long as shaping a healthy future remains, as long as it exists, the threat to Charing Cross Hospital, and indeed to Ealing Hospital, remains. Now, you know, Madam Mayor, this motion sets up quite a lot of things, but it does touch on another happy brief moment in 2012, when the Conservatives, who then ran the council, agreed to work with Labour on a cross-party campaign against shaping a healthier future. The sad thing is, after just a few months, they went behind our backs, if I'm right, and they held secret talks with governments and with local health officials, and they dropped out of the campaign. And they spent £20,000 sending all residents this leaflet, claiming wrongly to have saved Charing Cross Hospital. And they attacked us and the residents we were campaigning alongside with for the fight that we were putting up against the continuing threat to Charing Cross. Now, this motion sets out some of the tweets issued by the current leader of the opposition and by Greg Hands, the Conservative MP for Chelsea and Fulham. You'll see that as we fought to get the facts out there, you'll see that you can see for yourselves how they wrongly accused us of lies, mistruths, falsehoods, all words in those tweets. And that's shocking. And just as shocking were the leaflets they put out last year, which claimed, and I'm quoting, there have never been any plans to close Charing Cross Hospital. As if shaping a healthy future didn't exist, as if the Sustainability and Transformation Programme didn't exist. And it gets worse. At the last election in May, every single Conservative councillor in this chamber stood on a platform which claimed there are no plans to downgrade or demolish our hospital. 87% of the hospital land due to go under shaping a healthier future, but no plans apparently. And you can still find that on the website, actually, the Conservatives' website at hfconservatives.com/backourplan, an invitation that the voters of Hammersmith and Fulham largely chose not to take up. So, Madam Mayor, this is shocking, but why I believe the Conservatives have taken this approach is perhaps even more so. I think their reason wasn't about health or health bosses. I think it was about ideology and about their political bosses, and it was about supporting George Osborne and David Cameron's wild austerity programme, the most far-reaching cuts in the NHS and public services in our history. Austerity is the reason behind shaping a healthier future. Austerity, driven by a Conservative government ideologically bound and backed by Hammersmith and Fulham's ideological Conservative councillors. So, Madam Mayor, whatever the opposition may try to say now, let's remember the facts. Remember their behaviour over many years. And remember that Labour councillors will never stop fighting for our residents' NHS. We will fight locally against the £21 million of cuts which are planned in non-hospital services in the borough in this year. We will fight across London against the government's new drive to sell off NHS land. And we will fight nationally to get a Labour government in power that will invest in the NHS and in Charing Cross for the future. And I beg to move this motion.
Councillor Quigley. Sorry, before you start, may I just remind everyone this is Councillor Quigley's maiden speech. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I want to thank the residents of Hammersmith Broadway for electing me. On the 3rd of May this year, I entered this building as Miss Quigley. On the morning of the 4th of May, I left as Councillor Quigley. It was a fantastic night. I'm very proud to be part of the Hammersmith Broadway team, along with Councillors Cohen and Murphy. I would like to also thank the campaign team for all their hard work. I'd also like to thank my predecessor, Michael Cartwright, for serving the community for 26 years with diligence and integrity. It's a challenge and an honour to follow in his footsteps. Madam Mayor, I'm speaking on this motion because I'm worried about the new threat that is facing Charing Cross Hospital, a new threat that is coming from the government's plans to sell off NHS assets. I know I'm not meant to be controversial in my maiden speech, but I feel I have to say something now. A lot of people don't realise it, but there's a programme underway to sell off the so-called surplus NHS land across London and the whole country. The Prime Minister admitted it in an interview with Andrew Neil in 2017. She said, and I quote, "There's a report that was done on the NHS, the NADA report, which sets out what was needed and we're backing the proposals in the NADA report." What does this mean? Well, for those of you who haven't read it, basically NADA is saying that NHS buildings should be sold off. That means fewer GP practices, closing and downgrading hospitals and centralising services. NADA also says that if health trusts refuse to sell, then they should be the ones to be punished by not receiving the new capital funding they so desperately need. NADA is so keen on getting rid of NHS assets that he has encouraged the government to match the funding for a 2-to-1 deal. A bug off. It's a dull, you buy one, you get one free in a supermarket deal. Well, I'd like to tell the government they can bog off. Madam Mayor, I worry that an acute hospital like our own Charing Cross will be seen as rich pickings. To drive the sale of these properties, an NHS London Estates Board has been set up that would cut local NHS bodies and local councils such as ours right out of the loop. Madam Mayor, the government should not be auctioning off NHS assets and buildings. It should not be threatening to reduce Charing Cross to a shadow of its current self. And Madam Mayor, I'm sorry to be even more controversial, but I really don't think much of the opposition's behaviour here. They want us to believe that they've had a change of heart. I'm sorry, but that's just hypocritical. I won't forget how they spent years jeering and heckling because Labour were fighting to save Charing Cross Hospital. Their behaviour shows how desperate they are. They have lost two elections in a row, and now they are trying to eat their words to get re-elected. Well, they didn't fool me, and they didn't fool the local people either. And finally, Madam Mayor, if I may, I'd like to end on a happier note. I'm delighted that Charing Cross is 200 years old this month. So happy birthday, Charing Cross, and here's to the next 200 years. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other speakers? Councillor Rory Vaughan.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. It's a privilege tonight to be able to stand up and say on behalf of our residents, happy 70th birthday, NHS. You are the service that this country is proud, that was forged in the aftermath of the Second World War by a Labour government, delivering healthcare for all, not just the few. We are, of course, particularly privileged to have some great healthcare facilities locally, from pharmacists to health centres, GPs to hospitals. We admire the dedication and service of those, yes, all of those, who work in our local health service. But the NHS didn't get to 70, and we didn't get our great local services without rocky patches along the way. And of course, none rockier than the past few years when our local hospital services have been under threat. The necessity of maintaining those services, Madam Mayor, which our residents so value, is the reason that this administration has worked tirelessly with residents to save our hospitals. And politics, of course, is all about trust. The trust of our residents who have been sent here to represent, and they've told us time after time about the importance of Charing Cross Hospital. But let's remember the recent rocky journey of our local NHS. Cast your minds back if you can. The consultation on shaping a healthier future was launched in June 2012. Charing Cross was to be a local hospital with very few services on site. We were appalled. Residents were appalled and angry. The campaign to save Charing Cross began well with a cross-party campaign against the proposals, as my colleague Councillor Coleman has mentioned. Tens of thousands of signatures were gathered. The now leader of the council even asked residents to give Conservatives the benefit of the doubt, as some doubted whether they really opposed the plans. We demonstrated together outside this town hall. Sadly, that unity, as we know, didn't last long. The leader could have saved his breath. In February 2013, the former Conservative administration fell in with the plans for Charing Cross, negotiating with the NHS behind our backs and those of residents. They'd apparently won some concessions. As was mentioned earlier, their own famous leaflet claimed that Charing Cross had been saved. It was a deceitful, underhand move. We were appalled. Residents were appalled. Any trust in the Conservatives was shattered. Fortunately, Labour-controlled Ealing Council threw us a lifeline by referring the proposals to the Secretary of State. Something the Conservative administration in Hammersmith and Fulham ought to have done too, but didn't. The Independent Reconfiguration Panel then reviewed the plans in summer 2013 in consultation with residents. They concluded that the future of the proposed local hospitals at Ealing and Charing Cross and the final decision as to what might best be provided in each location as part of the plans must be the subject of a specific programme of work led by local commissioners and engaging the public, service users, staff and the relevant local authority. This work should address the need for inpatient services for vulnerable and frail elderly, and its outcome will determine the need for further consultation. NHS bosses have told us different stories over succeeding years about how they might arrive at any different form of services at the downgraded Charing Cross. I and my colleagues have posed the questions. We've not received the answers. As I've said, this administration knows the value of the NHS. We have not let the matter rest. We've worked with residents to fight the proposals, and our actions speak for themselves. We and other North West London councils commissioned the independent Mansfield Commission to report on shaping a healthy future. They delivered a withering assessment that the reforms, both proposed and implemented thus far, are deeply flawed. We refused to sign up to the Sustainability and Transformation Plan, which included continued implementation of shaping a healthy future. We commissioned a follow-up review of shaping a healthy future and the STP. And the work goes on because despite this, these plans have not been withdrawn. NHS bosses do not have any intention of putting any new proposals out for full public consultation with a new analysis of the proposals. We're doing all of this alongside residents because we believe in the NHS. But the Conservatives have an appalling record on the local NHS. They should have referred the plans to the Secretary of State. They didn't. They have claimed all is well time and again. They've accused us during election campaigns.
Sorry, Councillor Vaughan, we need
I
to
will
wind up.
Wind up, Madam Mayor. They've accused us of peddling lies about Charing Cross. And now, without any hint of apology for these reprehensible actions, they're trying to ask local residents to trust them to oppose the NHS's plans. Why on earth should they do that?
Any other speakers? Councillor Richardson?
Councillor Brown.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. This motion does not come as a surprise following last fall council. And you know, it got me pondering, what does the Labour Group in Hammersmith and Fulham want to achieve at full council. Helpfully, one of their new councillors told a member of our group, you know, Stephen Cowan views the sole purpose of full council not to help the residents of our borough by coming to a consensus on issues that could improve their lives, but instead to humiliate the opposition. How sad. Fortunately, I have broad shoulders. I must admit I feel rather sorry for the poor soul who had to trawl through 16,000 of my tweets to find these weak examples taken out of context, mostly from 2014 or before. But let's move on to the substantive issue of the future of Charing Cross, which, after all, is what is important to our residents. Since I have been health spokesman for the Conservative Group, which is over 4 years ago, we've been absolutely consistent in what we have said, that being we will not support any downgrading of Charing Cross. What happened before the 2014 election is something that I can only refer to, on the whole, from second-hand sources. However, I have been assured by both Nicholas Botterill, Marcus Ginn and Lucy Ivamy that what they agreed to support was a very significant improvement on the original proposal for Charing Cross Hospital, which included a full A&E, the retention of the majority of its existing services and a significant number of acute beds, as well as a very significant investment in a new building on the Charing Cross site that would be built and operational before any of the current buildings were decommissioned. That position has been confirmed to me as accurate by senior local NHS leaders. Anything that I or other Conservative councillors, past or present, have said is based on that context. The simple fact is that when my former colleagues agreed to what they did, they were either misled or the NHS position has changed. Remembering that the NHS is an exceptionally complex collection of organisations that have differing priorities, stakeholders and goals. Are there things that the previous Conservative administration got wrong on this issue? Yes, there are. I have said repeatedly in this town hall that it was a mistake to leave the cross-party and resident-led campaign, as we did. It was also a mistake to put out the literature, which Councillor Coleman helpfully held up, that Charing Cross had been saved, when in hindsight it was very premature to do so. I repeat on record that I apologise for these mistakes. It is also important to recognise that there is still a threat to the future of Charing Cross Hospital. Despite the fact that the NHS had promised that any negative changes to the hospital will not happen to 2021 at the very earliest, and in November last year we heard from the most senior executives of the hospital who stated that they don't believe that shaping a healthier future will ever happen, as it would be clinically unsafe to do so. It is for these reasons that we also call on Shaping a Healthier Future to be withdrawn, and why we joined the administration at Health Scrutiny to vote for not signing up to the North West London SCP, as Councillor Vaughan will attest. The question remains, will you make the same mistake that we did whilst there is a Conservative government in Westminster, of turning away from the offer of cross-party campaigning for the future of our hospital? I expect I know the answer, but the offer remains on the table. We will continue to campaign for the hospital with or without you. We have made mistakes in the past, I admit to that. However, we fully support our NHS and we fully support Charing Cross Hospital.
Thank you. Any other speakers? Councillor Richardson.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Hammersmith and Fulham contain some of the richest and the poorest people in the land. In Imperial Wharf in Sands End, among the glossy and silver and glass multi-million pound penthouses, there are some of the highest rates of child deprivation. Children who can hardly afford to eat live next door to the rich and powerful. We need our institutions like the NHS, which are free at the point of entry, to ensure these children get the care that they deserve and need, so we do not become a city that serves only the wealthy. Among the community of my ward, I met many residents living with health conditions, both physical and mental. These people need us to help us get access to the services. They need a hospital they can go to. They need a real hospital made of bricks and mortar that they can go to and speak to a real doctor. They don't need a virtual hospital, a GP at hand, a small bungalow that is a hospital only in name. In a city where public spaces are getting eroded every day, our hospital stock is crucially important. We must protect these precious buildings. Once they are knocked down and the land sold, they will never be got back. In 2014, the Hammersmith and Fulham Labour Party made it their election pledge to save the hospital. In reality, this meant an awful lot of reading of long, incomprehensible documents, unpicking the shifting acronyms and obfuscation of the language to bring in these cuts through the back door. The leader worked tirelessly to pursue the truth hidden behind all the language. Our CCG continues to grow more unwieldy as it merges with other CCGs. Cuts are hidden by increasingly complex language and mountains of paperwork. But out of this darkening mountain of documents, there came a bright star, a small miracle, a group of Hammersmith and Fulham residents, a feisty, determined group who loved Charing Cross Hospital. They are not going to accept that it's going to be demolished. In 2012, in response to shaping a healthier future, they formed a group called Save Our Hospitals. They are a staunchly apolitical group in partnership with the local MP, Andy Slaughter, Councillor Cowan and the Labour Council. They set to work. They meet, they march, they demonstrate, they print and hand out their own leaflets. They are not paid, they are not trained, they are not daunted by the CCG. They have between them some of the greatest expertise on the NHS. The CCG hold them in trepidation and respect. They know this group will not let anything pass them by. They are ordinary people who, by grouping together, have made the extraordinary happen, a stay of execution. This is Labour Party work at its best. With the people, for the people. Politicians and community working side by side. I look forward to working together with all our residents to get what's most precious to us all. A real guarantee that Charing Cross Hospital will never be demolished. Happy 70th birthday, NHS. Absolutely.
Thank you. Councillor Cowan.
Yeah, I just want to come back at the leader of the opposition's comments. I suppose sometimes those sort of homespun, wise statements that you get given by people who know better than you all through your life come to play. And one of the ones I think we've always operated on, along with, I think, the way the public always operates on, is you take people how you find people. Now, I don't think it's good enough for the leader of the opposition to distance himself from everything that went on from 2012, 13, 14, because not only was he a part of that party, he was its biggest cheerleader. Now, we can apologise for that, but there was no apology for the stuff that's happened more recently. So let's just remind ourselves what that was. Because I think the difficulty about something like the Charing Cross issue is it's quite complex to get the details out there at a time when the public have so many other things on their minds. So letting people know what the details were of the plan that was signed up to in 2013 by Jeremy Hunt and backed by the Conservatives viciously is quite hard. Now, we know the details. Ben set them out in his speech. But it's quite hard to get that out. Now, anybody who had a fine understanding of what those details were and a commitment to honestly sharing that understanding with the public, most of whom in the early stages of this genuinely didn't know what was going on because they were being told things were diametrically opposed to each other. One group of people saying it's saved, another group of people were saying it's under threat. We all know it is under threat. At every single point, the leader of the opposition was in the camp that sought to back the line by those Conservatives. He was one of their leading people to do that. Quoting his medical education, which should have allowed him to know better, he still passed around every single piece of information. And you see it in this motion. Even as recently as the 8th of September 2014, He was saying, Imperial Trust are confirmed they have no plans to close A&E. Well, it was pretty obvious because they'd signed the documents in 2013, and if you read them, it made it very clear they were going to close the A&E. By the 27th of November 2017, The leader of the opposition is tweeting, the STP plan states that Charing Cross will continue to provide its current A&E and wider services for at least the lifetime of the plan. Now, that's true, but disingenuous, I think, would be any real measure of that statement. Because we all knew the lifetime of the plan is in 2021, and at the committee which the leader of the opposition sat on at the time, the NHS had turned up and said, yep, we're closing it after 2021. Indeed, when some of the senior bureaucrats in the NHS wrote a letter threatening me, which I'm told came at the instigation of the Conservative Party, and I believe it was, when that letter arrived, did they say, this is outrageous, let's stand by Labour because in this instance they're telling the truth and trying to do a difficult job to save our hospital? No, they delivered the letter around the borough, writing Labour lies in their own hand. We saw a former Conservative councillor delivering some of the leaflets, and indeed they then put it on their own leaflets. Now, was that because they thought that this disingenuous half-truth was an affront to the cross-party campaign that they should have been in all along, or was it because they thought they'll have one last crack at persuading people there was no threat to Charing Cross Hospital? So I think what these people are up to, and you can see the effect of this by the small number of them left, what the Conservative Party is up to in Hammersmith and Fulham is trying to reinvent itself. After not we've told them they were wrong, but after the public have told them they were wrong in two big of the landslide elections that Labour's ever won anywhere in Great Britain. Now that's where they learnt the lesson, at the hard end of a public whipping. And that's not any way to get the epiphany we were helping you to try and reach much earlier. You're too late, Mr. the Party. We just simply don't believe you. We don't trust you. And more importantly, neither do the public who you let down throughout that period. And that's why we will carry on. And with a very short time, we believe we will successfully save Charing Cross Hospital. And we will work with the residents, some of whom are here, to make sure that us and the residents stand shoulder to shoulder in protecting it for another 200 years. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there any other speakers? Councillor Vincent.
Thank you very much, Madam Mayor. I should say a few words because Charing Cross Hospital is obviously in Fulham Reach Ward. Those of you who know me well will understand that I don't actually know a great deal about football. We don't do football in Dorset, but I'm still going to jump on the bandwagon of a new season of football and use a football expression. I think this is all about a game of two halves. In the one half, in the light blue shirts of the NHS, are doctors, nurses, ancillary workers, European citizens, citizens from further away, all of whom are looking after the health of our nation. In the other half, their opponents. In dark blue, the Tory team, managed by Theresa May. Managed? Well, if managed is the right word, for the shambolic performance on every front by Theresa May. Not even an M&S waistcoat could improve her performance. I'm told that's a football joke. And it's a vicious match as well. I'm sure there are genuine supporters of the NHS in the Tory team, but you sure have a funny way of showing it. Let's look at some evidence. The first exhibit is the Lansley Report. You'll remember that. We all agreed that now was billions of pounds of wasted money in the NHS. The second evidence is the continuing threat of US health providers raiding the NHS. Mr. Trump, President Trump, I'm sure, will insist that if Dr. Fox has a trade deal with the US, that will be allowed. And it's interesting that when Mrs. May was in Washington last year, she was asked about this but did not rule it out. Third piece of evidence is the Naylor report mentioned by my colleague, selling off the NHS, including land at Charing Cross Hospital. Some might say that's selling off the family silver. On the NHS side, are plenty of good things. Firstly, there are improvements to the A&E at the moment. They're underway at Charing Cross Hospital. But all that does is proves what a strain that the A&E is under. There's also the promise of 20 billion extra money from the Tory government.
That's great, but is it enough, or is it just standing still? And, as has been mentioned by another of my colleagues, we have a great community movement trying to support and save Charing Cross Hospital, save our hospitals. This organisation just gets stronger and stronger as everybody realises the threats to our local hospital. And a small but nice thing is that Charing Cross Hospital actually employs the granddaughter of one of the great heroes of the NHS, Clement Attlee. So, we've got this resolution before us. We've heard from the Leader of the Opposition his views on the NHS. I ask, will the Tory team show a true change of heart and support this resolution? In 2014, I was canvassing in Fulham Reach and ended up having a long argument with a local constituent who supported the demolition of Charing Cross Hospital. It was a fairly, vigorous discussion. I must apologise because at the time I didn't recognise the person who turns out now to be the Leader of the Opposition. At that time, he loyally, in 2014, followed the Tory team line. And what was that line? Well, it was supported by Tory leaflets. I have one as well. This is one you'll all remember. Saving Charing Cross Hospital is saved. This is from 2014.
2018,
it's still there. Yeah, it's a souvenir. But it's an odd way to save a hospital. Selling off most of the site, knocking it down, reducing 600 beds to 60, and downgrading the A&E. I don't think the Tory team over there has changed its colour of its shirts from Tory dark blue to NHS light blue. Do you? Well, we'll find out when we come to the vote. So I would ask the Tory team to support this resolution. I would wish the NHS team a very happy birthday. I would wish the Tory team would be honest. Are you, the Tory team, still in favour of knocking down Charing Cross Hospital?
Yes.
Are you really trying to save our hospital for our community?
No.
Or are you just trying to have it both ways from what we've heard from the Tory benches tonight?
Yes.
Is this a cynical and dishonest position that seeks to stand in the middle of the issue and not really take sides? So I'll finish with a quote from another great hero of the NHS, Anuri Bevin. We know what happens to people who stand in the middle of the road. They get run down. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Brown.
As a point of personal explanation, you have absolutely misquoted our conversation from 4 years ago. I have never supported the demolition of Charing Cross Hospital. And, I will take action against people that say I have.
Any other speakers? Councillor Coleman, would you like to sum up?
I think there's a bit of confusion here. What you supported, and what you've supported up to this very moment, is the Shaping a Healthier Future plan, and that will downgrade the A&E to an urgent care centre. And the, well, let me be a bit clearer. You wonder what the purpose of these meetings. You wonder what the purpose of these meetings is. I'll tell you what the purpose of these meetings is. The purpose of these meetings is to make it quite clear to people what they in some of the purpose of the meetings, quite clear to people what they're dealing with when they deal with the opposition. I have to say, I respect Councillor Vincent. He's a proper lawyer, not a barrack room lawyer. But he's also a generous man. And he said, you're standing in the middle of the road. You're not standing in the middle of the road. 2017, when you are the health spokesperson, leaflet by the Conservatives, there have never been any plans to close Charing Cross Hospital. May 2018, when you are health spokesperson, the election manifesto of the Conservative Party, there are no plans to downgrade or demolish our hospital. October 2018, Council Chamber. Today, Councillor Brown, there is still a threat to the future of Charing Cross Hospital. Now, I'm not suggesting there's going to be an election tomorrow, but I think I've just written one of the leaflets that residents would be happy to see. This doesn't work. It doesn't work like this, Councillor Brown. It doesn't work like this. It doesn't work when Councillor Karlobach comes up to me last year and tells me, after a PAC meeting, after a scrutiny committee meeting, to be a little less tough on the hospital bosses who I'm challenging about their plans.
It doesn't work for you to come today and say, we've changed our mind from last year when I was a spokesman and said there were no plans to downgrade or demolish the hospital, from the year before when you said there were no plans, to come and say today there is still a threat. It doesn't work like that. All I can say, really, is I don't know if any of you remember Caroline Ahern. She used to have she's a comedian. She used to have a great comedy show, and I would think a very famous interview she did with Debbie McGee, delightful Debbie McGee. So, Debbie McGee, she said, what is it that first attracted you to millionaire Paul Daniels? To which all I can say is, so my Conservative councillor colleagues, what is it about losing two elections in a row that first attracted you to change your mind on Charing Cross Hospital?
Thank you. Sorry, Councillor Coleman, was that your sum up?
Yes.
That's fine. Sorry. Is the motion agreed? Agreed. No. So now I call upon the motion to put it to the vote. Those in favour? Those against? And those not voting? Those not voting? I know, well, that's... No, not voting myself. I hereby announce the outcome of voting, 4, 31, and not voting, 11. The motion is carried. Item 6.2, Special Motion 4, Censure of the Right Honourable Greg Hounds, MP. I call on Councillor Alan Diaf and Councillor Asif Siddique to move and second.
Formally moved.
Formally seconded.
I call on Councillor Diaf and Councillor Siddique to speak for the administration, and please note that this will be Councillor Siddique's maiden speech.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. In our democracy, we elect individuals to represent their communities. Our MPs are meant to stand shoulder to shoulder with their constituents. They're meant to be there in our time of need, and they should have our backs at our most desperate hour. And indeed, we are at a most desperate hour as we face this Tory Brexit madness. Our nation is at the crossroads, and so our residents are looking to their politicians for leadership, for hope, and to represent their views, their needs, and their interests. But what do we find in Chelsea and Fulham? The betrayal of the people by Greg Hounds, a man who has repeatedly held his constituency and its people in utter contempt. He has chosen to turn his back on the good people of Chelsea and Fulham and the desire to maintain our current relationship with our fellow Europeans. Now, during the general election campaign, I was honoured to be the parliamentary candidate for Chelsea and Fulham. I took part in a number of hustings with the other candidates. Not once did Greg Hounds turn up to Hustings, instead leaving the Tory seat either vacant or getting the disgraced former leader of RBKC to take his place. Had Greg Hounds bothered to turn up to the Hustings or even bother speaking to the residents during the campaign, he would have realised the importance of Brexit to the constituents. Instead, concerned only with himself, Greg Hounds has chosen to neglect his constituents. Now, this shouldn't be a surprise to anyone. He has repeatedly put his party before his constituents. As we've heard, he supports the downgrading of the A&E at Charing Cross and the demolition of the majority of the site. He supports the social and historical vandalism of the beautiful Sutton Estate, once home to hundreds of families. Unlike other Tory MPs who objected to the super sewer in their constituencies, Greg Hounds ignored the concerns of the residents of Sands End and supported this monstrosity to be placed metres from their home. He ignores the businesses and traders in North End Road, referring to the 150-year-old market as a stain on the community. He supported the previous administration plans to demolish much of the Clonmacnoise estate in my ward. And he supported the closure of Fulham Police Station by the former Tory Mayor of London. But the biggest betrayal is his refusal to speak up for and defend the interests of the residents over Brexit, over two-thirds of which voted to remain in the European Union. Not only that, but his attacks on the Electoral Commission, as highlighted in this motion, and his support for those attacking the independence of our judiciary, is dangerous for our democracy and is part of a worrying trend we see from those on the right who seek to undermine our democratic traditions and institutions. Now, he received a rebuke from the Electoral Commission, but it just highlights the arrogance and ignorance he has shown over the Brexit debate. The Brexit madness he now advocates further shows this arrogance and ignorance. This Brexit supports the refusal to promote and protect the uniqueness and quality of British agricultural products and foodstuffs currently protected under EU law. It fails to protect the service sector so crucial to our economy, and it puts at risk the Irish peace process and the British Union itself. To top it all, Greg Hans's cruel and insulting comparison of the Brexit negotiations with the First World War is particularly shameful as we honour and commemorate the 100-year anniversary this year. This motion calls on Greg Hans to respect the wishes of his constituents, calling on him to demand a vote on the final terms of Brexit, with the option to retain our current relationship with Europe. But if he fails to campaign for his constituents' wishes, this council calls for him to resign and trigger a by-election, so that the people of Chelsea and Fulham can be properly consulted on the most important issue facing this constituency and our nation. He should respect his constituents, respect their choice to remain, and importantly, respect the values and principles of representative parliamentary democracy. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, Councillor Sadiq, may I remind you, this is his maiden speech.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I am humbled and proud to be one of the newly elected councillors in Ravenscourt Park Ward, along with my hard-working colleagues, Bora Kwan and Jonathan Caleb-Lendy. I would also like to thank my family and my mentors, Barry Stead, Jasmine Pilgrim and William Hunter, for their continued support during the campaign over the last 3 years. Most importantly, I would like to thank the residents of the Ravenscourt Park Ward for the placing their faith and trust in me. I will endeavour to do my utmost to repay their trust. I pay tribute to the work of the outgoing councillors, Charlie Dewhurst, Lucy Ivamy and Harry Phipps. Let me turn to the motion before us today. It reminds us of the damage that is being caused by the government's chaotic negotiations with the EU. It also reminds us of the damaging behaviour of the MP for the Chelsea and Fulham, both during his time as a minister and since. 31,636 of our 185,004 residents holds a passport of EU member country. That is 17.1% of the borough's population and is much higher proportion than the average for the London, which is 11.5%, or England and Wales, which is 4.2%. And 56,188 people, which is 70%, voted to remain. Greg Hans does not seem to care about these people or what they think. He opposes the idea of a sensible implementation period after Brexit until recently. A transition period for 21 months was being discussed, but instead now we are faced with a no-deal Brexit. Madam Mayor, a no-deal Brexit would be bad for our residents' businesses in Hammersmith and Fulham. A no-deal Brexit means that on the 29th of March 2019, everyone associated with the EU would abruptly end with no clarity. It would spell international isolation, a serious shock to the economy, and disruption right across our society. During my door-to-door campaign at the last local elections, many EU families asked me about their future after Brexit. The prospect of a no-deal Brexit has them ever worried, more worried. What will happen to them if free movement abruptly ends? And what will happen to our borough if we lost the thousands of residents from the EU living in and working here, in NHS, in financial services, and in businesses large and small? Madam Mayor, many Labour colleagues and I know that our country has been stronger, safer, more powerful working with our EU neighbours. That staying in the EU is in the best interest of our future generations. We believe in improving, not damaging, the lives of our residents. We are fighting hard to protect the rights of our residents, our businesses, our NHS. And we are fighting hard for the people's vote to allow our residents' voices to be heard. At the council's election, in our manifesto, we said we believe is Brexit is bad for jobs, businesses, and the long-term prospectus of our NHS and other public services. We promise to campaign against the Conservatives' Brexit madness vigorously, arguing for an opportunity for the peoples to have a chance to compare and vote on a deal Theresa May negotiates alongside the options of remaining in the EU. Local people responded us, giving us more of their votes than ever before. While the vote of the Greg Hands Party, the Conservative Party, deservedly collapsed. Madam Mayor, I'm proud to second this motion. I call on Greg Hands to respect the wishes of his constituents and either join us in calling for a people's vote with the option to remain in the EU or do the decent thing and resign. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there any other speakers? Councillor Layton. And may I remind everyone, this is Councillor Layton's maiden speech. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much, Madam Mayor. It's a real honour and a privilege to be here in the Council Chamber today making my maiden speech as the recently elected third Labour councillor in Addison Ward. And I would like to say a particular thank you to the 1,762 residents of Addison Ward, many of them European citizens, who chose to place their trust in me as their councillor. I look forward to continuing to serve them and acting in their interest as their ward councillor over the next 4 years. I would also, of course, like to pay tribute to Councillor Belinda Donovan, who, as we all know, served as one of Addison's councillors from 2006 to 2018, and who could often be seen cycling around the ward in support of the local community. And although I'm sure we will at times disagree politically in this chamber, I would like to wish her the very best in her new endeavour as one of Town Ward's Conservative councillors. So, after a long and challenging election campaign, it was truly wonderful to see that the Labour administration in Hammersmith and Fulham had earned the trust of our borough's residents to lead the council for the next 4 years. Residents have seen firsthand the change that Labour has led in Hammersmith and Fulham since 2014, with an administration that has defended our local health service, protected our parks and community assets, eliminated home care charges for the elderly, banned the use of harmful weed killers, and, of course, stood up against a Tory hard Brexit. In the referendum of 2016, residents of Hammersmith and Fulham voted overwhelmingly to remain in the European Union. In the 2 years following, this administration has led the call for a people's vote on the terms of the deal, with the option of remaining in the EU. We firmly believe that any Brexit, let alone the disastrous hard Brexit being pursued by our car crash Tory government, is harmful, reckless, and will wreak untold economic damage to our country, especially if, as is looking increasingly likely, we leave without a deal. In Hammersmith, we are lucky to have our excellent Member of Parliament, Andy Slaughter, showing true leadership by taking a principled stand for a people's vote. In Fulham, however, residents are sadly not so fortunate. Instead of a principled politician, they have Greg Hands. Someone who once extolled the benefits of remaining in the EU has now shamelessly hopped aboard the Brexit bus. Mr. Hands now supports a hard Brexit Canada-style trade deal that would threaten the services sector, which delivers so much of our local and national economic growth, putting residents' jobs at risk here in Hammersmith and Fulham. Furthermore, as Councillor Diaz has already said, it's disappointing, to say the least, that Greg Hands has joined in with the recent right-wing attacks on the Electoral Commission. This is the body that exists solely to safeguard our electoral system and ensure the integrity of our democracy. There are very serious questions that need to be answered regarding the conduct of the Leave campaign, as the Electoral Commission has found, and they shouldn't be simply swept under the carpet, as Mr. Hands suggested in The Times earlier this year. So, instead of supporting the decisions his constituents made, Greg Hands has chosen to betray them with a hard Brexit, threatening their jobs, their safety and security, and even their very right to remain in the country and the city they now call home. Now, I can't be the only one who has travelled past the words emblazoned atop of the Pimlico Plumbers building and thought, my thoughts exactly. And so I will conclude by saying that, like the vast majority of people in this borough, I voted Remain because I believe that all of us are better off in the EU, in close cooperation on trade, social justice, crime and the environment. This administration is standing up for the residents in Hammersmith and Fulham who voted to Remain, and our European residents who were denied that right. And so it is high time that all of our borough's elected representatives did the same. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Holman.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, for giving me the opportunity to speak on this. I want to speak on behalf of all the residents who Greg Hands has let down. We know that many EU residents have made Hammersmith and Fulham, and indeed Chelsea, their home. And we consider people from all different nationalities, and many from the EU, as our neighbours. However, there's one group who we don't talk about very much, who have generations of history and connections with this borough. This group in particular, who are still settling here in significant numbers and are only second to the French. And that, Madam Mayor, is the Irish. As you yourself will know very well, we value highly our Irish heritage in this borough and retain strong relationships with Ireland. We don't, however, often talk about Ireland when we discuss Brexit and what our residents might be feeling. What we do know is that Irish residents and those entitled to an Irish passport are taking advantage of dual citizenship in their droves. Applications last year were up by 97%. And we also know that one of the biggest obstacles to Brexit is negotiations highlighted in the motion is whether or not there should be a soft or hard border in Ireland. No agreement has been reached on how to avoid checks or infrastructure at the border. Technology, a degree of ongoing regulatory alignment, and some sort of customs agreement have all been suggested as possible solutions, but it's unlikely that any of these will be put into place if there is a no-deal scenario. And as others have already said this evening, this is the way we seem to be heading. If there is no deal, one proposed solution to avoid disruption at the border is for the UK to waive all checks and tariffs on EU goods going through Northern Ireland. However, many trade experts said this would trigger the most favoured nation principle, in World Trade Organization agreements. This would require the UK to re-waive its tariffs and check on goods coming in from all other countries. This would cause delays and reduce trade, particularly in agricultural foods, which is one of the biggest products that goes across the border. And quite frankly, as an ex-trade minister, Greg Hand should have had a grip on this, but I can find absolutely no record whatsoever that he ever did or that he's ever expressed any concerns about it. The infrastructure that we need to put that might need to go into place has also risen concerns about it possibly being a target for dissident Republicans. Others believe that there should be no border checks whatsoever, and this is certainly the view of most of the people in Northern Ireland. Which begs the question about parity, I believe, with the rest of the UK. This is a total mess, which the Leave campaign did not talk about during the referendum, and they do not have any answers to now. It is of great concern to those living on both sides of the border in Ireland and Irish citizens living here in the UK, and the significant number who live and still continue to want to live in Hammersmith and Fulham, who, like other EU citizens, are very worried about their status here and their future ability to easily move between the two countries. As the motion says, as International Trade Minister, Greg Hand's MP was party to and partly responsible for the government's botched approach to this chaos and should be accountable for his actions to the residents of Chelsea and Fulham. It is clear that those who voted for Brexit, the consequence to Ireland and Irish residents living in the UK, was never in the equation. And it's just one more reason why people should be offered a vote on the final deal. If Greg Hand wants to repair some of the damage he's done on this, he should support a people's vote, join with us in Hammersmith and Fulham Labour Council in doing so. And on behalf of all the EU residents in Chelsea and Fulham, particularly the Irish residents, if he doesn't want to do that, step aside. Support the motion.
Thank you. Councillor Ubroy.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I would like to start with a recent quote from Mr. Hands in his letter to Theresa May, explaining why he jumped ship from his collapsing Conservative government in response to its position on Heathrow's expansion. Referring to the policy, he said the following: "As you know, I have been a long-standing opponent, and I feel strongly that politicians must have credibility to ensure public confidence in our democratic system." Madam Mayor, we are all aware that Mr. Hands campaigned for Remain, and I ask this chamber tonight, where is the credibility in publicly supporting Remain and then abandoning those beliefs after a narrow and questionable referendum by saying, and I quote Mr. Hands' recent appearances in The Times and on Twitter, "We need to put the EU referendum behind us. It's time to get on with it." I ask this chamber, how does it ensure public confidence in our democratic system when the elected representative for Chelsea and Fulham stops fighting for the clear wishes of the vast majority of his residents, our residents, when they voted to remain in the European Union? Now, some observers in Chelsea and Fulham may be surprised at the sheer brazenness of this, but in Sands End, very few are surprised. Mr. Hand said that he campaigned hard to prevent the super sewer from being dug in Sands End, but then waved through the very Act of Parliament that enabled the disruption we see today. Mr. Hands said that he supports good local schools, but remained silent when the previous Conservative administration planned to close the fantastic Sullivan School in Sands End. Mr. Hands holds meetings about crime in Fulham, conveniently forgetting to mention his role in police cuts as Chief Secretary to the Treasury, which led to less centrally funded police in Fulham and the closure of Fulham Police Station, both of which have severely impacted residents in Sands End. But now his behaviour is being seen on the national scale when it comes to Brexit, at the expense of his residents, both British and European. Madam Mayor, this side of the chamber is different. We campaigned passionately to remain in the run-up to the EU referendum. Do you now hear us say, we need to put the EU referendum behind us, it's time to get on with it? No, you do not. Because we know what our constituents voted for. We know what they expect their elected representatives to do, especially in the face of the daily carnage that is the government's Brexit handling, especially on behalf of our thousands of European neighbours and friends in Fulham. We go again. We double up our efforts. We look for every and any possible way of reversing this damaging and long-lasting position we find ourselves in, because we will never stop fighting for the interests of our residents. That is why we were the first council to formally call for there to be a vote on the final terms, including the option to remain, a last chance to stop irreversible harm to our country, our economy, and our community. We do this because when we campaigned for Remain, we actually believed it. Our constituents have told us what they want, and we must stand up for them. We don't just drop our support when it becomes an effort. That is why, Madam Mayor, I support this motion, as should all elected members of this borough and constituency.
Thank you. Councillor Cooper, do you wish to speak?
Madam Mayor, we live in a representative democracy. MPs are not delegates, and whilst by default they should represent the views of their constituents, who gave them their jobs, our constitution also allows them to follow their conscience on matters of principle. The problem here is that this is really obviously not a matter of principle for Greg Hands. 2 years ago, Greg agreed with this side of the chamber that both his constituents in Chelsea and Fulham and the British public in general would be better off if the UK stayed within the European Union. Having said that, of course, people can alter their opinions. Perhaps Greg Hands has genuinely changed his mind. As John Maynard Cade said, when the facts change, I change my mind. And the facts have changed. We were told that a deal with the EU would be the easiest in history. We were told that we would have £350 million a week spare cash to spend on the NHS. And the reality is that the best the government can tell us about the post-Brexit world is that we will have adequate food. So I find it very hard to believe that when he looks at the facts of the unfolding Brexit disaster, that Greg Hands has actually changed to his mind, that he really thinks to himself, yes, I was wrong. Leaving the EU is really great for this country. So why is he now supporting, not only supporting Brexit, but supporting a peculiarly damaging form of it to be implemented? Because, Madam Mayor, the problem for Greg Hands is not that the facts about Brexit have changed, but that the Conservative Party has changed. In John Major's day, the fundamentalist Eurosceptics were a tiny minority who were seen as unpleasant extremists by the Tory mainstream. Today, those people are in control of the party. It is unacceptable to disagree with them, and like medieval heretics forced to publicly recant their views, Tory MPs who voted Remain are supposed to renounce their Remain heresy and embrace Brexit as Greg Hands has done. And yet, if there is ever a moment when members of Parliament should be putting principles and the welfare of their constituents ahead of their own self-interest, then it is now, when the decisions of those 650 MPs will have a lasting impact on Britain for decades to come. Those women and men will be answerable to future generations for what they do and say right now. And on the biggest issue facing this country in recent history, Greg Hands is neither representing the views of Chelsea and Fulham nor acting out of principle. He's just trying to make his life easier within a Tory party that has collectively lost its marbles. This is why I support this motion.
Thank you. Councillor Thornley.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Before I start, can I congratulate the three councillors who gave their maiden speeches tonight. As someone who voted Remain, who believes both EU membership and European migration have on balance been good for Britain's economy and society, I'm afraid I do not believe it would be right to hold a second referendum, a so-called people's vote, on the final terms of Brexit. Supporters of a second referendum make the argument that democratic decisions are not frozen in time. They can be revisited. This is clearly right, otherwise the result of the 1975 referendum would have defeated any argument to hold another one in 2016. When the facts changed radically, which I think was the case between the votes of 1975 and 2016, then I do not believe the electorate's authority as decision maker would be undermined if asked to decide again, because they would be asked to make a new decision on new facts. However, I do not believe the facts have changed radically in this case. In 2016, advocates on both sides made it clear if the UK voted to leave the European Union, it would do exactly that. In the 2017 general election, both the Conservative Party and the Labour Party stood on manifestos that promised to implement the will of the British people. These two parties received 82.4% of the total vote, whilst the Liberal Democrats, who the only party at the time advocating a second referendum, saw their share of the vote decline. The SNP, who of course want a second referendum on Scottish independence, lost 21 seats and saw their vote decline from nearly 5% to 3%. On the 23rd of June 2016, voters were simply asked if they would like to remain a member of the EU or leave it. But the Labour manifesto in 2017 was for a hard Brexit. It promised to leave the European Union by accepting the result, and that freedom of movement will end when we leave the European Union. By definition, for freedom of movement to end, we will have to leave the single market, since, as the EU's chief negotiator has observed, the four freedoms are indivisible. In many parts of the country, including London and the north of England and in the Midlands, voters flocked to the Labour Party and supported this manifesto. Let us not forget that Article 50 has been triggered, and it seems very unlikely the UK can unilaterally revoke it. The Court of Justice on the European Union is the sole body that can decide whether Article 50 can be revoked. It is too late to hope that the referendum result and its subsequent implementation and all of its consequences can be rewound. The only way to have prevented this would have been for Remain supporters like myself to have won the argument about our membership of the EU back in 2016. We have recently had two referendums in this country that have proved highly divisive. I do not believe the circumstances dictate that either vote needs to be rerun. I will not be supporting the motion tonight calling on Greg Hands MP to demand a vote on the final terms of Brexit, nor, shockingly enough, do I support the call, in the event, of course, he doesn't back the motion, for him to resign and call a by-election. Whilst he did campaign with me in 2016 to remain, he stood, along with other members of the Labour Party, upon a manifesto that backed Brexit and was elected in 2017. If a second referendum were to happen, which I personally, as I say, I don't think would be right, and I think is highly unlikely, my fear is such a campaign would be charged with even greater anger and bitterness than the 2016 campaign, and Britain would be left with an even more divided and dysfunctional politics than it has today. So I will be voting against this motion.
Thank you. Councillor Brown, do you wish to speak? Right, I now call on Councillor Diath to sum up. Oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, sorry. Okay. Councillor Coleman. What does that mean?
Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Councillor Jones? Okay, after.
I feel that this motion is filled with rank hypocrisy, especially from Councillor Diath, who stood on a Labour Party manifesto against Greg Hands in 2017, specifically supporting Britain leaving the EU. That is the manifesto that you stood on, and I presume that is the manifesto that you all campaigned for, both in Fulham and Chelsea, and also in Hammersmith. Also, what you're calling for is not the position of the Labour Party. The Labour Party does not support a people's vote with a right to remain on the ballot paper. But perhaps what is more important in this debate is that In many cases, it wasn't the Conservative Party that lost the referendum on whether we stayed in the EU or not. The Prime Minister at the time, the vast majority of Cabinet ministers, and the vast majority of Conservative members and activists, certainly in London, campaigned and voted to stay in the EU. But this isn't a little red book, it's a rather bigger red book about the about what happened during the election the referendum campaign. It's by Tim Shipman. And in chapter 19, you know, quite wittily labelled, Labour isn't working, it puts a lot of the fault on why the referendum was lost for the Remain side squarely at the foot of the leadership of the Labour Party and Jeremy Corbyn in particular. The leader of the Labour Party that you all support, who doesn't support your proposal for a people's vote with remaining in the EU on the ballot paper. So to call for the resignation of Greg Hands MP, who very recently, following a manifesto pledge that he made to vote against and resign from the government over Heathrow, you're calling on him to resign against the manifesto that he stood and comfortably won on in Chelsea and Fulham, and go against the wishes of those electorate. Now, we don't have a window into people's souls. We don't know what the people of Chelsea and Fulham now wish to happen with regard to Brexit. There are many people around the country who once voted Remain now believe that Brexit should go forward. Now, there are many people on our side of the chamber that wish that Brexit wasn't happening, that the Remain campaign won. However, that is simply not the fact, and it would be an assault on democracy for that to be overturned. And as I said at the start, this is a hypocritical motion on a position where the Labour Party is on exceptionally shaky ground.
Thank you. Councillor Jones.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I've spoken before on the subject of Brexit, and I want to come to our position on the arguments that we've heard so far in relation to Mr. Hands in a second. But I want to start by helicoptering out on behalf, in my role as a councillor in this borough, of the people who live here. And setting aside some of the discussion of individuals and technical processes, I want to think about what we are dealing with. The arguments I've just heard from the opposition are akin to being on the flight deck, and the aircraft metaphor is relevant in a minute, of a plane that is flying into a mountain, with people arguing about what the protocols are in the handbook. We've heard the technical arguments about the nature of the process. Well, we can't pull up because the manual says we can't. And we've heard other arguments about the relationship between the people leading, flying the aircraft. So I want to start by telling you, helicoptering out and saying something about what is about to happen, quite in all probability, in the context of Brexit in this borough. And I want to quote somebody who I think knows something about it, and somebody who has not got a partisan view so much by not being an elected representative at the moment, and that is the former Conservative Prime Minister, John Major, who gave a speech last week which I think is very pertinent. And he said this: "There is no doubt in my mind that our decision is a colossal misjudgment that will diminish both the UK, which we talk about a lot, and the EU," that's my segment, "and the EU, which we don't talk about. Quote, it will damage our national and personal wealth and may seriously hamper our future security. It may over time break up the United Kingdom. It will most definitely limit the prospects of the young. I don't know how many people here have children, but you might reflect on that. I believe those who promised what will never be delivered, as we come to the discussion at the moment, will have much to answer for in the future, looking ahead from our time-based helicopter. They persuaded a deceived population to vote to be weaker and poorer. That will never be forgotten nor forgiven." Now, let me say something about the reality of what is going on in this borough. You are aware the administration has an industrial strategy, and I will share some epithets with you. So, one, I'm listening to Greg Clark talking about free trade at an event in my academic world with people from Imperial. Imperial are, to say the very least, like most universities, deeply concerned about the impact of Brexit, the viability on their highly skilled academics, to the point where they have just gone into a partnership with Munich Technical College because they need to be able to apply for grant funding. In the future, I need not state the obvious, this is not a positive, it is a positive relationship for Imperial, but it is a cost. Because, of course, they would not have had to do that without the context of Brexit. Within our industrial strategy, I talked to a large number of firms investing in London. We think about the same issues in terms of the labour market, their access to highly skilled people. Will they locate in Hammersmith and Fulham? The answer is disinvestment and uncertainty. Many of these firms supply, as is mentioned in the motion, services in London to the manufacturing base of this country. Quietly or not so quietly, companies like Airbus, Nissan, Toyota, BMW are talking about shifting manufacturing production, which has a lot of relationship to the service jobs in this borough, away from the UK. They are certainly not investing. The same is true of the pharmaceutical company. There are plenty of people in this borough who work for companies like GSK. And so we come to this position where the reality, the gravity of what is about to happen, it is not acceptable for my MP, for Lisa's MP, for the MP of many people here, to shift position on such a substantial issue without making a clear case and getting into the complexity of the argument. The position of Greg Hands is one where quite clearly he was advocating remain for a set of good reasons, and only last week we have him advocating a report which shows little understanding of the nature of London and this borough's economy, its dependency on service sector, its dependency on free movement of labour, highly skilled labour migration. And we will look at a future where no matter what the government does, as John Major says, this economy in this borough becomes smaller, less relevant globally, less innovative, and more irrelevant. And on that note, Madam Mayor, I'll finish.
Thank you. Are there any other speakers? Councillor Schmidt.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I'm just going to briefly rebut the quite narrow points that the two speakers from the opposition made, although the much bigger points that Councillor Jones made are really the ones that we should be focusing on, which is the devastation that Brexit is going to have on our economy, on our community, and as he pointedly said, on the next generation of people in this community whose life chances are worse now than they would otherwise be. But the first speaker from the opposition said that the facts have not changed, and therefore there should not be another referendum. I could not disagree more, Madam Mayor. The Leave campaign put out leaflets. I saw then Conservative councillors handing them out, saying that Turkey was about to join the EU, and therefore if you don't want Turkey to join the EU, you need to leave it, if you don't want to be in the same union as Turkey. That is not true. That was never true. That was a lie. And when we're talking about a very narrow referendum, these lies matter. Campaigners for Leave, including the prominent MEP in the Conservatives, Daniel Hannan, said that we could have the Norway option. It's perfectly sensible to have the Norway option. Why not stay in the single market and customs union? As has already been said, that option is no longer open to us. We're not prepared to do that. That was a key fact. I spoke to a lot of residents when I was campaigning. They said, oh, it's fine, we'll stay in the single market. Look what happens in Norway, it's fine. No, that is not being considered by the government. That fact has changed. They also said that doing a trade deal with the EU would be the easiest trade deal in the world. Well, if we look at the scenes in Brussels this evening, we can see that that fact has certainly changed. Key facts that residents considered, not so many residents here, but people across the country considered when they voted leave, key facts have changed. Let's have another vote. Let's see a deal, or more likely no deal, that the government comes up with. Let's compare it to the deal that we have now in the European Union, and let's have a vote, because facts certainly have changed. The second speaker went into a discussion on manifesto promises. He accused us of hypocrisy, yet managed to completely contradict himself. He said that Councillor Diaf had to be held by the National Labour Manifesto, which was to remain, which was to leave the single market and to leave the customs union, ignoring the fact that Councillor Dieff vigorously, during a campaign I was proud to campaign with him on, vigorously in his campaign said that he wanted to stay in the EU, yet he held him to that national... Perhaps you would have seen that in the hustings if Greg Hands and you guys had bothered to go. Yeah. Councillor Dieff said he was campaigning to stay in the EU, so don't hold him to the Labour manifesto. We don't agree with that. If you haven't paid any attention, we are setting out our own policy. Yet you then afforded Greg Hands the luxury of having a local manifesto and being against Heathrow, even though Greg Hands stood on a national Conservative manifesto which called for the expansion of Heathrow. It said, we will expand Heathrow. It said, we will expand Heathrow. So Greg Hands stood on that national manifesto. The Conservatives got more votes nationally than any other party in 2017. Why don't we just say the people have voted? Let's forget about it. Let's ignore the fact that local residents are against Heathrow. No, of course we don't do that. We continue to campaign. As Councillor Oberoi said, we go on. We keep fighting. How can Greg Hands understand this when he sees loud planes going over his house, yet he can't understand it when he confronts the most fundamentally important issue, as Councillor Jones has pointed out, that we face in this constituency, in this borough, and in this country? He is applying a double standard, resigning on Heathrow and saying, oh no, the people have spoken on the EU, let's all jump into this uber right-wing Canada Plus model and close down the economy to Europe and close down the futures of the next generation and ignore the 30,000 European residents in our borough. That is not acceptable. Greg Hands needs to recognise that the fight is not over. The fight has just begun to stay in the EU, and he should be siding with us for a people's vote so that we can stay in the EU. Thank you.
Councillor Coleman.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Mayor. It's tempting in this debate, isn't it? Suddenly we're all super... It's tempting to be fascinating, or the debate's fascinating. It is a strange old debate because, you know, when we talk about Brexit, we're talking about what led people to the vote. We're talking about the damage that it will do to the economy. We're all suddenly experts. You know, I might respond to you that if we change our mind, obviously the rules are that it'll be up to the EU if they let us back in. You should say I, because I want us to change our mind. And if they let us stay in, they'll make it happen. We know that. That's the way the EU works. We just have to want to change our mind first. But anyway, I'm not going to talk about that. I'm not going to talk about the fact that the reasons behind Brexit are to do with, you know, lack of industrial policy in this country, which helps people in the north. We're the only party in this country and a part of the country to have an industrial policy for many, many years. The government certainly hasn't got anything worth talking about. And that's one of the problems that led to Brexit, which it is actually ridiculous to put the failure of the referendum at Jeremy Corbyn's door. I'm flattered that you think he has this influence and this power, and that may be reflected in the next general election. But he didn't call the referendum. He didn't try and keep UKIP from taking over the votes in Conservative voting areas. Your party called the referendum. Your party has to stand by what it did. And if I may come back to also what you said, Councillor Brown, you said this motion is filled with rank hypocrisy. And I'd agree with you there, because it is filled, rich, and overflowing with Greg Hands. Because the distinction we have to draw here... Why don't you listen for a minute? I think that's how you operate. You don't listen, but you project. So if you listen, you might hear me suggest that actually what this motion is about is the distinction, a very, very simple distinction, which we've already addressed earlier this evening, between Labour... politicians of principle here in Hammersmith and Fulham, the MP who is prepared to resign his seat, his place in the shadow cabinet over Brexit, we who take issue with our party and are content to say so and stand on an election which we won hugely, overwhelmingly against you, on a different position from our party. And the distinction is between politicians, Labour politicians of principle in Hammersmith and Fulham, and you. Whether it's a Conservative who says in 2017 there have never been any plans to close Charing Cross Hospital, the next year there are no plans, and here tonight says there is still a threat to the future of Charing Cross Hospital. Whoops, we lost two elections. Or whether it's an MP for Fulham and Chelsea who says one thing and then rather than stand up for his voters, 70% of whom voted in the referendum to stay in the EU, sides with the narrow clique that the Conservative Party is becoming in a desperate attempt to claw his way back into some sort of cabinet in the future. Well, and this is the MP who you say competently won his seat. Councillor Diath, his position, he took on his party in the election. And Greg Hands, what happened to Greg Hands? He had his majority slashed in half. Now, that's competently won. I'd like to know what a rubbish outcome is. Perhaps the rubbish outcome is when he loses his seat at the next election. This whole evening so far has been about politicians of principle versus politicians of expediency, and people will remember that when it comes to the next election, and Greg Hands has one final chance, which this motion gives him, to show that he has some backbone, that he is prepared to take on the parts of his party that he disagrees with, as Andy Slaughter is, as we are, and either do that and call for a people's vote on the referendum, or stand down and let somebody else who listens to their representatives, listens to the people they're there to represent, take over from him. And I urge you all to support the motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cowan.
Look, I think what's dismaying about some of the reactions we're getting from the opposition benches is there's plenty of opportunity for any of them to stand up and talk and tell us their views. There's been just two. Okay, and what we've had is heckling and that sort of nonsense. And I would sort of try and draw it back to why are we doing this? Well, let's say something won't be a surprise to anybody. We're not fans of Greg Hands. We've never really thought he was very good on a range of issues. We haven't thought he was very good on the super sewer, as Councillor Uberoy set out. We haven't thought he was very good at Charing Cross when he was tweeting that it wasn't under threat. But at no point did we seek to censure him or indeed call for a recall. Because maybe that was just the nature of it. Maybe it's the nature of once having had a very safe Conservative seat. But it allowed people to say one thing and then switch and change their positions and something else. But we never, ever called for a censure of Greg Hands on those issues. That's just what he was like. But this isn't those issues, is it? How often do all of us get the chance to try and influence something as historic as Brexit? I honestly do not know what to say when young people, when I visit schools, say to me, what's going to happen? Because the government can't tell them what's going to happen. And very few other people do. There's commentators, but no one knows. There's uncertainty. And that uncertainty is sucking out the wealth of our city and transplanting it elsewhere. The patisserie down the road I go to said that the number of French citizens who used to come in are less. There is change happening all around us. Racism has spiked. So things are changing around our great country and most wonderful of cities. And people look to their representatives, their elected representatives, to speak out and act and tell the truth and do what they think fit as principle. And that's why we've brought this motion. Now, personally, I never believed Greg was a Remainer. I was surprised when he was and pleased when he was. But the behaviour since has been dreadful. To attack the Electoral Commission, at a time when people are openly questioning democracy around the world. There's far right are winning more votes than the SDP in Germany. There's neo-fascist in Eastern Europe. Trump. If we don't stand up to show that when you elect someone, they will act in the best interest of a resident and they will argue the points. There is nobody making the point that where we are now in this current situation, and I have some sympathy for Theresa May, but it's chaos, and it's mismanaged, and it's damaging, and we can't tell the next generation that it will be better and safer and more wealthier than our generation. Now, if we can't do that, we have a duty, a historic duty, to stand now and call for a change. And that's what we're doing to Greg Hands. We are censuring him for quite honestly unacceptable behaviour. Behaviour that is beyond the pale. Behaviour that is out of this moment in time. So it's not us calling for this, it's the residents who ask, where will our elected representatives be? We know where Andy Slaughter is, we know where Hammersmith and Fulham Labour is, and we know that all change has been made in history when people stand up and call for it. That's what we're doing here. We're calling for a final say. with the option to stay in Europe. And we're saying, let's light that flame and let's carry that torch and let's make that happen. And we're saying it not just because we believe it here, because thousands of our residents do. And where they don't, and maybe it was the Russians, maybe it was the lies, maybe it was just how rubbish the Remain campaign was last time. But when they don't, let's go and honestly persuade them and take our ideas and debate and win the arguments and secure our great country and our children for future that we think they deserve. That's why we're doing this. Vote with us and stand up and be counted.
Thank you. Are there any other speakers? No? I shall call Councillor Diath to sum up. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I thought we might have a few more speakers, seeing we're getting a lot of noise from the opposition. Just want to refer to a point that one of the speakers mentioned about essentially that we should just shut up and put up. Now, the Leave campaign has already been found to be in breach of electoral law and has been fined for doing so. And there's all credible accusations of foreign interference in the democratic process. So it's clear the referendum was not even conducted freely or fairly. And that in itself should be the very basis of demanding a second vote. But Greg Hands has been tweeting quite recently. He sort of claiming he was leading the Remain campaign here in Chelsea and Fulham, but which was nonsense. But he also says, where were you when we needed you? Well, we were out knocking on doors, and we're talking to residents, and we are still doing that. So my question now is, where are you now when we need you? So many other Tory MPs are standing up and taking a principled stance to defend their constituents and uphold the values of representative democracy. You've got Justin Greening, Heidi Allen, and Sarah Wollaston, just for example. Now, unfortunately, we're burdened with Greg Hands, who shows no courage or backbone on this. He's written a daft forward as well, which he tweeted, I think, yesterday, saying there's going to be some material costs to this Brexit. That's such a flippant and dismissive comment and ignores how those individuals and businesses, you know, the cost to those individuals and businesses might not be big in the grand scheme of things, but are huge to them, you know, especially those businesses reliant on just-in-time manufacturing systems or working within tight profit margins. He also said there's going to be no economic impact in the medium term. But what about the short term? No, he conveniently ignores that because he knows the risk and the impact to businesses who cannot weather the storm. You know, businesses have already left our borough or have informed the council that they're going to be moving operations to Europe. And let's not forget the economic impacts already. You know, the pound has lost value. We've lost up to 2% of our GDP, which is equivalent to £40 billion. The economy is 1.2% smaller than it would have been. And the FT has been looking and highlights the Brexit cost to be £450 million loss to the country a week. So as our nation faces one of the biggest challenges in our history, our residents should be able to rely on their MPs to stand up for them and speak out on their behalf, to defend Britain's liberal and progressive values. But as Greg Hands lurches further to the right, he ignores the wishes of the people and pursuing this ill-conceived Brexit. Yet you have to think, why has he changed his opinion? Why has he changed his view on this? Well, you just have to sort of see who he surrounds himself with. You know, he's regularly seen campaigning alongside the far-right ideologue, Boris Johnson. You know, his former campaign manager attended rallies by white supremacist Roger Stone, and he endorses the deplorable Sean Bailey, who we'll discuss later. He increasingly does not reflect the progressive and inclusive nature of the constituents, and instead an agenda of the right that pursues this detrimental hard Brexit. Despite the constituency being one of the safest Tory seats in the land until last year, Greg Hands' majority was halved, but also the swing to Labour was among the top 10 in the country, a clear indication of the betrayal felt by many of the constituents. The residents deserve better from their MP. The residents deserve an MP who will stand up and speak out on their behalf. Instead, we have Greg Hands, a man who puts his party before the people, his career before the community, and his self before service. If there is any shred of honour left in Greg Hands, any sense of civic duty, then he must alter his hard Brexit stance and instead represent and advocate for the good people of Chelsea and Fulham. And if he fails to do so, against the wishes and interests of the constituents, then this council calls for him to resign and trigger a by-election so that the people of Chelsea and Fulham can be properly consulted on the most important issue facing this constituency and indeed our nation. Thank you.
Thank you. Dare I ask, is the motion agreed?
Yes.
I now put the motion to the vote. Those in favour? Those against? Hereby announce the outcome of voting. 4, 30 and against 11. The motion is carried. To be perfectly honest, I don't know. Right.
Well, very dangerous precedent to allow demonstrations in the council chamber.
But he's not really demonstrating. Would you call that demonstrating? He's just making a little statement. Well, it is gone. It's gone. Right. He has removed it. Right. We shall proceed. We'll be here at midnight. 6.3, special motion 9, Conservative mayoral candidate.
Mayor, understanding order 14I, I withdraw the motion.
Withdrawing it. So what does that mean? I go to 6.4. Thank you. Thank you. Fine, we shall go on to 6.4. Special Motion 5, Standing Against Islamophobia. I call on Councillor Lucy Richardson and Councillor Wesley Harcourt to move and second.
Formally move.
I call on Councillor Richardson and Councillor Harcourt to speak for the administration.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Good evening. 10% of this borough's residents are Muslims. We stand with them against the rising tide of Islamophobia inspired by populist politicians furthering their own political aims. Hate crime has gone up 40% since the referendum. We are an inclusive council. We value everyone in our community. We believe in celebrating all faiths, races and cultures. We hold an annual unity march in celebration, showing residents that we are fighting this evil, insidious hatred that pollutes the very air that we breathe, hardens people's hearts to each other, tells them it is okay to blame and scapegoat different religions and ethnic groups. We are a safe haven for refugees. We have an anti-hate crime coordinator. It is now Race Hate Week, and so we call on all councillors and residents to sign up to our anti-race hate crime pledge on the council website. We admire and celebrate the courage of the driver of the number 9 bus to Hammersmith, who stood up to the EDL supporters of Tommy Robinson, blockading her bus because she was wearing a hijab and was a woman, remaining in her bus despite threats and insults until they were dispersed. We call on all in public life to promote religious and racial understanding and harmony, in particular, senior politicians. We deplore that Zach Goldsmith felt it was legitimate to attempt to link his opponent with Islamic terrorism in the last mayoral election. It was a campaign of fear, smear and bigotry. We trust that such a campaign will never be repeated. We deplore Boris Johnson's recent comments on the clothing of Muslim women and call on him to reject Islamophobia. We notice that he has not had a problem with U-turns in the past. In 2005, he said, "Islam is the problem. Islamophobia is a natural reaction." But then in 2009, he U-turned, saying, "Find out more about Islam. Fast for a day with your Muslim neighbour." But now, surprise, he is wibble-wobbling again. Letterboxers, bank robbers, rebellious teenagers, and describing the way that people dress as bizarre and unattractive and a seemingly deliberate attack on Muslim women. He was directed to apologise, but never did so. He even refused to backtrack after Theresa May said his comments obviously had offended. Were his words just harmless quips? I think not. He inspired hundreds of Islamophobic messages on his official Facebook page. Ban Islam, deport Muslims, no Muslims in the government, police or army, devil worshippers, invaders, lepers, hashtag Islamophobic and proud. His team did not hide the comments from the page, ban those who posted them, or even bother to report them. They left them there. They obviously felt this was okay. He is deliberately using racial hatred to appeal to the lowest common denominator and create racial hatred. We call on him to apologise and take all necessary measures and training to ensure that he does not say or do anything that provokes religious or racial intolerance again. We call on politicians of all parties to reject racial and religious hatred in the forthcoming mayoral elections and to campaign for an inclusive, multicultural society. I urge everyone to vote for this motion. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Harcourt.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Islamophobia was recently described in an article in The Guardian as the moral blind spot of the 21st century Britain. And like other social phobias, homophobia, xenophobia, Islamophobia is an irrational fear, a dislike, disapproval, prejudice, hatred, discrimination or hostility to Islam or Muslims. And don't anybody here ever confuse Islamophobia with medically based phobias such as agoraphobia or claustrophobia or even arachnophobia. Phobias which are genuine fears of open or closed spaces, or in the case of the last one, spiders. Islamophobia is bigotry, it's prejudice, and ultimately it is pure racism. In many cases, the term Muslim is simply a euphemism for brown or black and slips easily into racism in the same way as the 19th century anti-Catholicism transformed itself into racism against the Irish. In its report, Islamophobia, Still a Challenge for Us All, the Runnymede Trust states that anti-Muslim discourse is increasingly seen as respectable and that hostility to Islam is accepted as normal even amongst those people who would normally actively challenge any other form of discrimination. And challenge it we must if we want to live in a society where compassion and inclusion are the order of the day, rather than hostility and exclusion. I recall a number of years ago, when I was working as an employment rights advisor, a young Bangladeshi student came in to see me, complaining she was discriminated against for wearing a hijab by her managers at a West End fashion store. She worked there part-time. She was told, "Take that off, you look like a terrorist, you'll scare the customers, or get out." Luckily, we managed to reach a settlement out of tribunal. But is that the way we really want young people in this country to start their life? Is that the sort of Britain that we want them to think they are living in? Is that the sort of attitude they expect from the rest of us? Most certainly, it is not. It's simply a case of hatred or prejudice, yet again fueling anxiety and separation in our society, rather than fostering cooperation, caring, and compassion. More recently, and even much more evil in many ways, an anonymous group in the UK declared Tuesday the 3rd of April this year as Punish a Muslim Day and circulated leaflets in various cities around the country urging people to attack Muslims with guns, knives, vehicles or otherwise. Absolutely shocking. The remarks by Boris Johnson and others that my colleague Councillor Richardson has just described only serve, as I've said, to inflame injustice, prejudice and hatred, and threaten to tip what is a delicate situation in our society into one of hostility at a time when we should be uniting against the acts of terrorism perpetrated by a small minority of extremists. Indeed, words from across the cultural and religious spectrum about standing together with the victims of Borough Market attack or the Muslim community speaking out against extremism after the Manchester Arena attack. This is the society we want, not one that attempts to vilify and alienate a large section of the country. Islamophobia, as we know, is not limited to the UK. Let's not forget Donald Trump's attempt to ban Muslims entering the US, or Marine Le Pen's comment that no other religion is causing problems. These are just a couple of examples. Similarly, let's look at the terrorist attack on Coptic churches in Egypt a year ago on Palm Sunday, which provoked headlines such as, "When will Muslims stop murdering Christians?" Islamophobia rejoices in these attacks as they prove that Muslims hate us and that Muslim is a violent religion. But, and this is the but, Pope Francis, after these attacks, stated in his visit to Egypt, "I think it's not right to identify Islam with violence. This is not right. This is not life." He called for unconditional respect for inalienable human rights, such as equality among all citizens, and for religious freedom. I'm chair of a Catholic primary school, and I'm fully aware of the need for children to be taught positively about other religions. Contrary to reports in The Express that teaching had been about Islam had been banned in Catholic schools, we had a trainee Muslim teacher who taught year four pupils about the Islamic faith, and other Islamic support staff who visited our early years division, where pupils were encouraged to ask them questions about their faith. So to conclude, in this council and in this borough, we have a vision where equality, inclusion, compassion and caring are central to our way of life for all residents, regardless of their religion, heritage or culture. Support this special motion.
Thank you. Any other speakers? Councillor Diab.
Thank you. I just want to start by saying I don't really understand Islamophobia. Just for me, it's such a strange concept, just as anti-Semitism and racism and sexism. These are alien concepts to me, and I don't fully understand why people hold these views. But I'm really shocked by the rise of Islamophobia that we've seen in recent years, particularly in the Tory party. And I'm really troubled by the likes of Sean Bailey, who's seeking to be the Mayor of London, and some of the deplorable comments he's made about Muslim members of our community. I wonder if the reason the motion was withdrawn from the opposition about the mayoral candidate is perhaps because maybe they're having reservations about his ability and his fitness to be a member of as Mayor of London. Now, obviously, we have had many challenges recently in all parties regarding various forms of exclusion. We've taken measures within the Labour Party, but the Muslim Council of Britain has written to the Tory party in May this year, asking for them to conduct a full audit to tackle what it quotes as a more than weekly occurrences of Islamophobia from candidates and representatives of the Conservative Party. And it also highlights the lack of action taken towards elected representatives accused of endorsing Islamophobia. I would really urge the opposition to write to those above them and call them for their support for this inquiry into their own party. But also just shocks me how you do have individuals like Sean Bailey and Boris Johnson making comments which legitimise Islamophobia. Now, following
Boris Johnson's article about Muslims, members of our Muslim community here in Parsons Green were targeted and insulted using the exact same words used by Boris Johnson in that article. What shocks me is there was no word of condemnation from the local Tories and no words of support offered to those victims. It just shows a worrying trend that some of these issues are not being tackled seriously, despite the words we hear in here. So I would urge them to support what the Muslim Council of Britain are asking, but also trying to tackle Islamophobia wherever we see it, including in Parsons Green and elsewhere across our borough. Now, I would say as well that... Sorry, I thought you were talking to me. Now, there has been accusations from a former Conservative councillor regarding issues within the local party. So I would urge the opposition to really look into this and make sure they tackle it head on, because what people need is confidence in their politicians and in their elected representatives, and also candidates as well, that they will tackle this issue wherever they see it and in all guises as well. So thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Kwan.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. If you'd asked me a few months ago whether we actually needed this motion, honestly, I think I might have paused, because isn't it obvious that Islamophobia is wrong, that racism is wrong? I mean, we live in a very diverse borough, Hammersmith and Fulham. We live in London and we live in the UK, which is known for a long history of immigration and integration. So haven't we overcome racism and discrimination? But I actually think that my naive blinkered pause is the exact reason that we're in this position today. We take it for granted that people are tolerant and respectful, but I think that recent events and publicity have shown that we can't take anything for granted when it comes to discrimination and racism. I'm going to expand on the data that my colleague mentioned earlier. So the data that was released from the Home Office this week, it's data from 2016, 17 and 18, so very recent, revealed that the police have recorded a surge in hate crime directed at people in England and Wales because of their religious beliefs. And that's just reported crime. That doesn't mention, you know, all the asides that aren't reported, you know, all the incidents that people are too scared to speak up about. So it rose by 40% to over 8,000 instances, 8,336 instances, reported instances in 2017 to 2018. And of that, most of that religious crime, 52% was aimed at Muslims. That hate crime includes verbal abuse, intimidation, threats, harassment, assault and bullying, as well as damage to property. Now, in court last week, we had the absolutely horrific case of the man who pleaded guilty to sending hundreds of racist letters nationwide, including his letter-writing campaign for the Punish a Muslim Day. He also sent hundreds of threatening letters to MPs calling for slaughter in mosques. He sent envelopes containing white powder, so designed to spread that terror of deadly chemical substances. And he also instigated a bomb hoax. All this in the environment where the country's been hit by genuine acts of terrorism leading to innocent deaths. So Islamophobia is very real, unfortunately, and it's very present in our society. And we can't afford to take anything for granted, and we need to take a constant and relentless stand against racism and hatred. And this is why Boris Johnson's newspaper column, frankly, shocked and sickened me this summer. It was a really cheap shot that he took at the expense of a minority whose only crime is to choose to wear a visible public expression of their religious affiliation. He used humiliation and ridicule to generate publicity for his own gain and desire for attention. It's disgusting the depth to which a senior elected politician would sink to drum up controversy. He's got a considerable platform. He has the honour of being an elected representative, and he used it to stoke anger, prejudice, and fear. And as for the management of the newspaper that chose to print and publish it, frankly, they were 100% complicit in those Islamophobic racist insults. So I am slightly worried about the forthcoming London mayoral election campaign. Given the recent events and also the disgraceful mayoral campaign that was run by the last Conservative candidate in 2016, we've seen the depths to which that campaign sunk to. And I would urge, for the sake of British values and for tolerance, multiculturalism, diversity, and against religious and racial discrimination, that they don't sink any lower.
Thank you. Any other speakers? Councillor Brown.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I think broadly on this issue, I think we can hope to seek a degree of consensus. I think we can all agree that Islamophobia and prejudice of any kind is abhorrent. It has no place in our society and it has no place in our borough. You know, we've had passionate debates about anti-Semitism in the past in this chamber. And obviously that's another motion tonight. And my view is if you are opposed to anti-Semitism, you are opposed to Islamophobia and vice versa and prejudice of any kind. You know, me, Victoria Belinda and I are very privileged to have the Al-Muntada Mosque in our ward. You know, we have visited that mosque on numerous occasions, recently along with the mayor and other members of the Labour group to celebrate their Eid celebrations. I am proud that we had Muslim candidates standing in many wards in our borough. And since then, I have been proud to visit the Conservative Friends of Pakistan reception in Parliament, as well as their stand at Conservative Party conference with our excellent candidate Leah Khan. You know, let's be absolutely clear: there is no place for Islamophobia. You know, I grew up with a lot of Muslim lads at school. My sixth form class was half Muslim. The cricket team that I played for at school was half Muslim. And, you know, I enjoyed, great friendships with those guys. They used to stay at my house when they were perhaps not allowed to stay out quite as late on a Friday night. And, you know, I would stand shoulder to shoulder with them or any other Muslim resident in our borough or our country if they are, being persecuted. I do think it's important when we're talking about the issue of the face coverings that some Muslim women choose to wear, that we don't conflate genuine discussion, which has been raised by people such as Polly Toynbee in The Guardian and by the Quillen Foundation. I think there is a legitimate criticism of oppression through the use of that clothing. However, it is not up to me and it's not up to anyone in our society to dictate to Muslim women, or anyone for that matter, what they can or cannot choose to wear. You know, I personally feel that Boris Johnson's comments in the summer were clumsy, to say the least. And I certainly also call on him to clarify and apologise for them. And as the points that Councillor Diath made regarding criticism of Conservative politicians, for that person whose job it was to go through my 16,000 tweets, they will have seen that I criticised a Conservative MP for sharing a platform with a Hindu extremist in the House of Parliament, who has, in my view, completely unacceptable views about Muslims. Now, that brings me on to the Zach Goldsmith campaign, which I must agree with Councillor Richardson was an awful campaign. I think virtually every single Conservative in London would agree with that. I remember it being discussed at a previous council meeting, and me and my colleagues been accused of putting through people's doors content which included Islamophobic or borderline material. Luckily, I keep copies of all the leaflets that I deliver, and there's not a single reference to that in any of them. I appreciate that there was some inappropriate dog whistle politics surrounding that lousy campaign. There were some legitimate questions about who the now Mayor of London had shared platforms with. However, If we're honest, it was a dog whistle campaign, and the electorate saw through it, and rightly so. It was a dreadful campaign, and bringing on to Sean Bailey, you know, the reason we withdrew that motion is because we did not want to see him in this chamber subjected to some of the racist abuse that we know he has received over the years in Hammersmith and Fulham. You know, supporters of yours have sent the most awful racist material to the Hammersmith Conservatives office attacking Sean. And I will not repeat what those dreadful, dreadful comments say. I'm not accusing any of you, but supporters of yours have been sending them. Now, Sean may have very clumsily said some things many years ago, which he has since clarified and apologised for. Now, I think that is the point where we should leave Sean out of this. Returning back to Islamophobia, let's all agree on the matter that it is absolutely unacceptable and should not be allowed or tolerated within our borough.
Thank you. Councillor Cowan.
Oh, sorry.
I mean, what do you say about that?
Sorry.
You know. That is... I thought the speech that the Leader of the Opposition, who was the Deputy Leader, gave about 6 months ago on anti-Semitism was possibly the worst speech I'd heard in this chamber. But that, quite frankly... Did he just say some of my friends at school were Muslims? I mean, that's... To come back and say that you withdrew the motion on Sean Bailey because you thought he would be subject to racist abuse, maybe from this group here, is an affront. And it's... I'll tell you what else it is. It is also stupid. That's what it is. It's ill-judged, as so many of your comments are. And, quite frankly, you can't have it both ways. This is a motion of something that is extremely important. Now, the one thing I give Boris Johnson credit for, is he's an extremely smart guy. He's very well read. He knows what he's doing. So why is he meeting Steve Bannon? Why is he looking at the Trump playbook? And then why does he write? Because when you write these conscious comments with malice, why does he write the things he does, knowing full well that it will create a firestorm amongst the Tory party and undermine Theresa May? And that people who are around her will come out, like Baroness Wassey, and attack him and many other Conservatives too. He did it because that is what his election campaign will look like if the calamity of Boris Johnson being the leader of the Conservative Party ever happens. So for you to dismiss all of that with the obfuscation and saying you withdrew the motion on Sean Bailey because you didn't want to subject him to any racism. Let me just tell you something about Sean Bailey. He's a grown-up man who is responsible for what he says and does, as are all of us when we stand for elected office or get to elected office. So let's judge people purely on what they say and do. Let's have a fair, clean election and no more ridiculous smears from what is making the Leader of the Opposition look a particularly small and increasingly small man who's not appropriate. I'll give you one piece of final advice. If you want to renew the Conservative Party, why not pick something like Amanda Lloyd Harris? Why not pick someone who is completely untainted by the ridiculous record and the ill-judged comments of the current Leader of the Opposition? Not does the Conservative councillors on these benches deserve better, but everyone who votes Conservatives in this borough deserves better. It's just simply not good enough. Apologise.
Thank you. Councillor Stainton.
Sorry, we haven't put this in. My criticism is that this motion simply doesn't go far enough. It's very narrow-minded. It sticks to one religion only, and we're all conscious that we've had anti-Semitism, we've had anti-Christianity. You probably remember the girl who wore a cross, who was a cleaner at Heathrow, and she was dismissed because she was wearing a Christian symbol. We've got to a point now here in London and probably in England and maybe even in the whole world where we're all in communication with each other. We're living together, we're working together, marrying each other, all the rest of it. We can't have phobias of any sort for any religion, so I find this motion just a little too narrow-minded. I agree with the idea, but it doesn't go far enough.
Thank you. Councillor Holman.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I didn't intend speaking, actually, but I do want to put on record something on behalf of a resident in my ward, actually, a lady called Jane Vernon. Jane's a blind lady, and she's got a lot of guts and a lot of tenacity. And very recently, she stood up to a Islamophobic incident on a bus. And not only did she stand up to it and report it, but she also pursued it. And as a result of that, she recently received an award from the No Hate Crimes campaign. And I just want to put my thanks to her and the Askew councillors' thanks to her on record. And I think everybody in this chamber can see what our citizens will do. Our citizens will stand up against this nonsense, and so should this council. And so I hope we can say thank you to Jane for doing that, but also fully support this motion this evening. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further speakers? I now call on Councillor Richardson to sum up, please.
I'd like to thank the councillors for sharing their views on and the chilling examples of Islamophobia, in particular Councillor Harcourt for providing such a thorough exploration of Islamophobia, reminding us all of the necessity to counteract its malign force with compassion, understanding and inclusive practices. I was also struck by what the Muslim community in Parsons Green have had to suffer. Also, the more than weekly incidents of Islamophobia in the Tory party that Councillor Diaz pointed out. And Councillor Kwan pointed out the 52% rise in Islamophobia. I think we should still be alarmed by Sean Bailey's remarks about the Muslim community. And I regret that we're not being allowed to discuss Sean Bailey's suitability for the mayoral candidacy tonight. I agree with the leader that Boris Johnson's remarks are not to be dismissed as clumsy. That's just naive. Boris is an extremely intelligent man who knows exactly what he's doing and what he says. Otherwise, he would not have left those comments up on Facebook. He would have apologised, as he had done in the past, when he called the citizens of the Commonwealth pickaninnies and talked about the watermelon smiles of the residents of the Congo. He wanted to keep his post and he apologised after that. He's perfectly capable of apologising. But he hasn't done this time because he wants to seek a political advantage, seeks to increase his vote in the worst possible way by exploiting division. So, in summary, I call on all the councillors and the residents to sign our online anti-race hate petition. I call particularly on Boris Johnson to apologise and undergo training to ensure he never behaves in this racist way again. I call on all in public life, particularly senior politicians, to promote religious and racial harmony. And let's have a proper mayoral campaign this time. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, is the motion agreed?
Agreed.
I declare the motion carried. 6.5. Special Motion 6, Standing Against Anti-Semitism. I call on Councillor Sue Fenimore and Councillor Mac Schmidt to move and second.
Formally moved.
Formally seconded.
I call on Councillor Fenimore and Councillor Schmidt to speak for the administration.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. As it says in the motion, this administration continues its strong, combative approach against anti-Semitism, and which is a particularly pernicious form of racism. In 2014, when we took control of the council, since then, we have held a variety of inclusive events, and at the heart of those is our annual event commemorating International Holocaust Memorial Day, on the 27th of January, the day Auschwitz was liberated. Lest we forget, that this genocide resulted in the death of an estimated 6 million Jewish people. The Holocaust Education Trust was established in 1988, and its aim is to educate people, particularly young people, from every background about the Holocaust and the important lessons that we must all learn. Working with its ambassadors, we have had the privilege to hear from some of the survivors. Renny Salt, who was marched, along with her family, to Bergen-Belsen concentration camp. Hannah Kleiner, who was sent by her parents on the Kinder transport to escape the Nazi regime, Kinder transport having been organised by Sir Nicholas Winton, a man who is remembered fondly for saving 669 young lives. And Hannah Lewis, who's witnessed her mother's murder by the Nazis before she herself was dragged off to a concentration camp. Hearing these experiences is harrowing, but it is absolutely right that these testaments are heard far and wide and that we never forget. The current rise of fascism across Europe and other parts of the Western world is indeed terrifying, and a reminder that we must, at every possible opportunity, reject it and never allow it to rise again. Standing together tonight and adopting unequivocally the full International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance definition of anti-Semitism is indeed a proud moment for this administration, and I urge you to support this motion. Thank you.
Thank you. And Councillor Smith.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Echoing Councillor Fenimore, we stand now with equal vigour and determination as we did several minutes ago to condemn anti-Semitism just as we condemned Islamophobia. Anti-Semitism is sometimes, Madam Mayor, just as brazen as the types of Islamophobia that we've discussed recently. Overt hate crimes against Jewish people are on the up across the Western world, in France, in Germany, here, in the US, not least in the disgraceful scenes we saw last year in Charlottesville. In Denmark, one of the few countries under Nazi rule that managed to evacuate their Jewish population, the old synagogue in Copenhagen now has to be guarded day and night by armed soldiers for fear of attack. So overt anti-Semitism is a huge problem and should not be underestimated. But the reason why we need this more detailed definition of anti-Semitism than elsewhere is because more often than not, anti-Semitism isn't as overt as other forms of racism, but it is done in code and insidious terms that have been with us now for centuries. Insinuation of control over the economy, insinuation of control over the media, making Jewish people accountable for the acts of Israel. We adopt this full definition to call out these insinuations as racist, not just because they are wrong, which they are, not just because they are insulting, which they are, but because through the centuries, these insinuations have been the first step to far, far worse, and they have led to the worst crimes that Europe has ever seen. So we hopefully stand completely united on this, that this council supports the full definition that the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance has put together, and make that official council policy, and going forward we'll continue to campaign against anti-Semitism in all its forms.
Thank you. Now I call on Councillor Dominic Stanton, and may I remind you all that this is his maiden speech. Thank you.
Madam Mayor, thank you. I think I echo some of the comments from the previous motions when I say we take for granted too quickly our democracy, our practice of listening civilly and respectfully to each other's point of view. And on a subject such as this, this is especially important. I'd like to start by thanking my predecessor, Mike Adam. Mike served the residents of Munster as their councillor for nearly 20 years. He gave a specialised contribution to the council, serving on the Audit and Pensions Committee for many years, and it's a sign of the esteem in which he was held and the expertise he brought with him that although he's no longer serving as a councillor, he continues to sit on the Pensions Subcommittee as a co-opted member. I should like also to thank the people of Munster for electing me in May. Whilst not everyone voted, and of those that did, not everyone voted for me, I look forward to working for and helping each and every one of those who need it. For my job isn't just to represent those that voted for me, it's to represent everyone in my ward, regardless of background, orientation, and regardless of who they voted for. Now, to turn to the motion at hand, it is with a somewhat bittersweet feeling that I come to be speaking here today on this particular subject. There's a special irony in that without the Holocaust itself, that ultimate expression of anti-Semitism from the last century, I wouldn't be standing here today. There are currently some 370,000 Jews living in the UK, each of them with a different story of how their family came to live here, be that a story centuries old or a story still within our living memory. My own, as it is for so many others, is one of recent immigration, our families having been forced to flee from Nazi Germany. I last returned to Germany 3 years ago as a guest of the Hamburg Senate, with my father as part of a long-running programme to reconnect displaced Jews to the country of their and their parents' birth. My grandfather was imprisoned as part of Kristallnacht in October 1938. And thanks to the intervention of my great-great-uncle, Rabbi Joseph Karlebach, he was released and subsequently escaped with his family to New Zealand, unlike so many of our family who are not so fortunate. Whilst there, I found a country that is still living with a collective memory of what had happened, but it's making incredibly positive strides to ensure that it never happens again. One particular story from that trip still sticks in my mind, that of an 80-something-year-old lady who, as a child, was sent to South America to escape the Nazis. Her father had been a decorated German war hero in the First World War, and when the events of 1933 to 45 were taking place, the initial feeling was one of disbelief. Not because this was being done to Jews, but because it was being done to German citizens. And for me, this is the key point. Here in the UK, British Jewry generally considers itself to be British first and also Jewish, just as those German Jews felt that they were German first and also Jewish. Discrimination against Jews, as much as Islamophobia, hatred of people based on the colour of their skin, or discrimination against those of the LGBTQ plus community, are all examples of the pernicious evil of discrimination, and they just should not exist in this modern day. From swastikas on synagogues to extremists from all sides of British politics blaming Jews for the problems of our country, anti-Semitism is on the rise in the UK and more broadly in Europe too. We cannot allow the events of the past to be repeated, and in a supposedly enlightened world, it almost seems bizarre that this still continues to be an issue. So I'm proud to support this motion without reservation. I'm proud that we as councillors can agree not to politicise or make partisan an issue as important as this. In a country founded on tolerance and civil discussion, the return to prominence of anti-Semitism in either of our great parties is something to be fought against tooth and nail. I welcome and applaud everything the members opposite are doing, both within their party and across the borough to fight the intolerance, and I will always be proud to offer them whatever help I can to continue this fight. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Johnson?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Thank you, Dominic. God, I can't follow that, but just a few words. And I was going to start with some references to the recently announced statistics that you talked about earlier, so I won't go over old ground, but it makes some compelling and difficult reading. And I'll echo some of the comments from Councillor Diath, who's back in the chamber. No, he's still not here. And Wesley, you said something at the end of your last speech. So I hope that all members in this chamber can perceive their role in their communities as conduits for harmony, success, collaboration, and cohesion, which I think is what we're all trying to get to. And I too welcome the adoption of the full definition as discussed in the motion. I'm doing some unpaid work for an interfaith charity called the Faith and Belief Forum, and they've recently launched a Faith and Belief Inclusion Charter. I've got it here. I'll just read out the first of the three principles. We believe in an inclusive society where people of different faiths and beliefs have strong and positive relations. We believe that intolerance has no place in our communities or workplaces, and that diversity adds value to our society. Signatories already have included a number of the single faith groups representing all aspects of the faith and belief evident in our communities and society at large. Again, a few of them from a list I have. The Board of Deputies of British Jews, Catholic Education Service, City Sikhs, Hindu Forum of Britain, the Muslim Council of Britain, Humanist UK, Quakers in Britain, and New Horizons in British Islam. There's a number of commercial organisations that have signed up as well, and we're trying to get them better engaged to further the strength of this charter and its power in the communities where we all live and breathe. So if it's acceptable, I'd like to forward the charter to the Chief Executive with hopefully your endorsement to then circulate it to the councillors, with a view for this council signing up to the Faith and Belief Forum's Inclusion Charter, which is non-political, and I just think the absolutely right thing to do. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other speakers? I now call on Councillor Fenimore to sum up, please.
Dominic, your speech was moving, and thank you very much for making it. Intolerance is indeed has no place in modern society. It has no place in this chamber, and it has no place in our borough. It's Hate Crime Awareness Week this week, so it's I'm really delighted to see two motions coming forward in order to try and publicly state our opposition to all forms of hate crime, racism. And I happen to be at a number of events going on around this time, Black History Month. We've done some amazing events around Black History Month this month, all about tolerance, inclusion and love, frankly. Yesterday I was at an event for young people who were talking about their experiences of coming out. There were some 14, 15, 16-year-old young women telling us all about their experiences and how they have, at that age, faced some hate. So it has been an extraordinary week, and I'm really delighted to see that it looks very possible that we'll be able to get consensus on this particular topic. Thank you.
Thank you. Is the motion agreed? I declare the motion carried. 6.6, Special Motion 7, Charter Against Modern Slavery. I call on Councillor Sue Fenimore and Councillor Sue MacMillan to move and second. Misprint. Councillor Schmidt. Thank you.
Formally moved.
Formally seconded.
I call on Councillor Fenimore and Councillor Schmidt to speak for the administration.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, again. Slavery refers to any form of forced human exploitation for labour or service. And slavery exists today in over 130 countries, and it's estimated that across the world, over 21 million people are the victims. It's extraordinary and staggering statistics, and shocking to hear that this form of abuse continues. The term modern slavery captures a whole range of types of exploitation, many of which occur together. These can include sexual exploitation, domestic servitude, forced labour, and criminal exploitation. To think that modern-day slavery exists in 21st century Britain is a disgrace, and we must do everything possible to prevent it. In this borough, we host a hostel
that gives sanctuary and space to those who have been the victims of modern slavery. And we are proud that they chose their home here in Hammersmith and Fulham. This motion, supporting the sign-up to the Charter Against Modern Slavery, is an important statement that we will not tolerate it in this borough, and it commits the council to proactively vetting their supply chain to ensure no instances of modern slavery are taking place here. I strongly urge you to support this motion.
Thank you. Councillor Smith, do you wish to speak?
Okay, briefly. This is an important issue that is, fortunately, an issue that in the national scene, both parties are starting to recognise. And it was, I would say, the highlight of Theresa May's time as Home Secretary, without great competition. But the highlight of her time as Home Secretary was the Modern Slavery Act. And it's an important piece of legislation, important not only here in the United Kingdom, but across the world. People are looking at it as a model to follow. And it's important for local government to sign up to it and to make sure that we often forget that as a council, we have quite a significant economic footprint. We buy about £250,000 of goods every year. From contractors, goods and services, and that then percolates down into the UK, where we have victims of modern slavery, but also overseas. And the Modern Slavery Act calls on companies to make sure that they put in place due diligence to not be sourcing products that have come through modern slavery from overseas. So it's early days for this piece of legislation, so I think it's really for councils and other public sector bodies to make sure that companies are starting to implement it, because they will need a nudge from us to really put it into practice. So I'm hopeful that everyone will agree that the council will do this today.
Thank you. Are there any other speakers? Councillor Thornley.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. The Home Office estimated that there are between 10,000 and 13,000 potential victims of modern slavery every year. But in 2015, only 3,266 potential victims were identified and referred to the National Referral Mechanism. Furthermore, a recent Home Office review has revealed modern slavery cost the UK between £3.3 billion and £4.3 billion, with the range of uncertainty around the number of potential victims. As has been noted, the government introduced the Modern Slavery Act in 2015, which consolidated the current offences relating to trafficking and slavery and introduced a range of new measures around the prevention of modern slavery events and the support and protection of victims of modern slavery. Key aspects of the Act included two new civil orders to prevent modern slavery, the creation of a role of an independent anti-slavery commissioner and its associated functions, the requirement for certain commercial businesses to produce transparency statements, and the provision for the support and protection of modern slavery victims. Clearly, councils have a key role to play here in tackling modern slavery, including identifying and supporting victims and working in partnership locally. I think there are four main areas that we should focus on as a council to tackle this issue. First of all, there is the identification and referral of victims. The second aspect is supporting those victims. This can be through safeguarding children and adults with care and support needs, and through, as touched on Councillor Fenimore, through housing and homelessness services as well. The third aspect is community safety services and disruption activities. And finally, knowing the council's role, ensuring that the supply chains councils procure are free from modern slavery. I'm delighted that the council is taking a proactive stance on this issue and supporting the Charter Against Modern Slavery, and we will be supporting the motion this evening. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further speakers? I call on Councillor Fenimore to sum up.
Wow, consensus, excellent. On these topics, I really believe there is no alternative, and I'm delighted to hear that you will be supporting the motion. In addition to this particular charter, I've had a number of meetings with senior police officers in the borough, looking at alternative and other ways that we can work together to ensure that wherever when there is fears of modern slavery, that we as a council support their work and they indeed support ours. So there is continued work going on in relation to partnerships, referrals, etc. So rest assured it is high on our agenda. So that's all really. Not much more to say. Thank you.
Thank you. I shall ask now, is the motion agreed?
Agreed.
I declare the motion carried. Item 6.7, Special Motion 11, call for a halt to government spending cuts to Hammersmith and Fulham schools. I call on Councillor Larry Culhane and Councillor Alan Diath to move and second.
Formally moved.
Formally seconded.
I call on Councillor Culhane and Councillor Diath to speak for the administration.
Thank you very much, Madam Mayor. I think Christina's probably went through it a year or two ago, your granddaughter, but at the moment a lot of families up and down the borough are in the admissions season. They're going around visiting schools both at primary and secondary, looking at schools that they would like to send their kids to September, send to school in September next year, and they'll be taken into many considerations. Now, I was born and bred in the borough, very proudly so, so I think I can say firsthand I know just how many dedicated staff we have in our schools, and it was also where I first came across Councillor Ahern, Uncle Colin, as a schoolboy in my youth. And we really should be thankful for all of the school staff. We really should be thankful to all of the teachers and support staff who educate our children on a daily basis. And we know that they're dedicated and caring because the results suggest that they are. 93% of our schools in this borough are rated either good or outstanding, which is way above the national average and something to be celebrated. At Key Stage 2 last year, we ranked the fourth highest local authority in the country for students making the expected standard. Another fantastic achievement for our schools in this borough. And this summer, this local authority was the eighth highest in the country for attainment 8 scores. So kids leaving year 11, what are their average scores? That gives you an attainment 8. We're the eighth highest local authority in the country. Again, another reason to succeed. So whether you're looking in the north of the borough, the south of the borough, the middle of the borough, whether you want a mixed-sex education, a single-sex education, perhaps even a faith school, I think we can all say that there's something for everyone in this borough, which is fantastic. But I would say that those fantastic results and statistics have come despite the last 8 years of funding cuts to this government. And there's a very real threat that there are more to come, Madam Mayor. Now, there's been a lot of debate in the media about this. On one side, people are saying school funding is being cut. On the other side, the Conservative government is boasting about record levels of spend in education. And in cash terms, they are right. It's not particularly difficult, because if you just increase funding with inflation, pretty much every government ever is going to keep spending record levels. But you may not have seen last week, Madam Mayor, that the Secretary of State for Education was actually slapped down by the UK Statistics Authority, because whilst in cash terms this government is spending record levels on education, they didn't adjust it per pupil. So the Institute of Fiscal Studies has said that actually, in real terms, funding has gone down 8% since the Conservatives first took over the Treasury in 2010. So those fantastic results I was talking about, they have come despite an 8% real terms cut. And the needs of our children haven't got any less complex. The needs in the city haven't got any less complex. Yet they've had to absorb that. You'll also, if you are interested, you can look at some of the work the unions have been doing around this, not just the teaching unions, but the unions that represent all the support staff. Some of their estimates are really scary. So between 2015 and 2020, this borough stands to lose, according to their research, £5.1 million worth of funding within our schools, which equates to around £541 per pupil. What does this mean in reality? I think there's quite a lot of us governors, as we saw with the declarations of interest. I think if you spoke to most head teachers at the moment, they are already near to the tipping point of how much they can tackle. Schools are already having to make redundancies. Class sizes are already increasing. Pastoral care being reduced. There are serious issues with retention and recruitment. For the first time in a long time, we are losing more teachers in London than gaining, and this is going to begin to affect outcomes if this government doesn't stop what it's doing now and actually fund education properly, because you cannot fund kids on you cannot educate kids on the cheap. And it might be easy for some people to say, oh, you teachers, you lot who work in education, you're always moaning about funding, we can never give you enough money. Let's not forget, for the first time in a lifetime, head teachers are marching on Downing Street. That is how serious an issue this is. So whilst we should all absolutely commend our staff in this borough who educate our kids every day and give them fantastic opportunities, we should also appreciate that they're at breaking point, and we should also collectively lobby the government. If it wants to educate kids, if it wants to give them the best start in life, it needs to fix up right now. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Councillor Dia.
Oh.
Okay. Madam Mayor, when I looked at this motion, it took me back quite a number of years, actually, to my days at university. This is the ultimate fight the cuts motion, and that's something that had resonance with me. And we talked a lot about Tory politicians over the course of this evening, but I'm going to tell you about a Trotskyist, a gentleman by the name of Marcus Luck. As far as I'm aware, he still is a Trotskyist, still active, I don't know. He wasn't allowed into the Labour Party at university. Emily Thornberry, who ran the Labour Club at university, wouldn't let him in. But he believed in the struggle, and he believed in fighting the cuts. And he believed so much in this that on the day of my graduation, when you think about it, Luck and Loveday, they're very close to each other in the alphabet, and he went to collect his degree from Joe Grimmon, the late Joe Grimmon, who's the Chancellor of the University. And Joe Grimmon asked him, as he asked all of the graduate candidates, so what did you study, and congratulations, and that sort of thing. And so he said to Marcus, so Marcus, what did you study? And he goes, fight the cuts. And Joe Grimmon was so taken aback, he said, I'm terribly sorry. He said, I didn't get your name. And he said, fight the cuts. It was the ultimate gesture politics, because nobody else apart from me heard. And it had no effect whatsoever on what Marcus wanted to achieve. And that, I'm afraid, is the criticism that we on this side have about the motion. Marcus was a history student, as far as I can remember, and a couple of things that have been mentioned tonight about the Labour legacy, the Clem Attlee government's legacy of the NHS, and about the coalition austerity, which is what it was referred to earlier on. A little bit of a history lesson. The last Labour government had a golden legacy, not quite something to be as proud about as the NHS. Gordon Brown not only bequeathed a £100 billion deficit, but he gave a bung of £850 billion to the banks to bail them out, including the rotten West Bank, which I happen to be an unfortunate customer of. And with that £850 billion that was given as a bung to the banks, and that deficit that was incurred in order to fund it, we could have afforded to have spent a vast amount more on schools over the last decade. And it's been the Conservative administrations over the last few years who've had to pick up the pieces and deal with the problems bequeathed by Gordon Brown and Alistair Darling. Marcus Luck believed in the struggle, and it has been a struggle to get the funding together for schools. The government have ring-fenced funding for schools. And as was said earlier on, that doesn't mean to say a real terms increase every year. What it means is that they've done their best. They've struggled with the money that's available. And it's been eaten away by inflation and other things. But the biggest problem, let's make no bones about it, the biggest problem for funding schools in this borough, and it's a crisis, £13.9 billion overspend on the dedicated schools grant and the threat to four nursery schools, which we saw at the last cabinet meeting, a report to the last cabinet, is a real crisis. But it's the national funding formula, the diversion of resources, educational resources, to the north, largely at the instigation of Labour MPs who wanted increased resources diverted to Manchester and Newcastle and the north, that is the cause of this. But nevertheless, there is something in this motion. There's something in this motion. We do support representations to government and a campaign to get a fairer settlement out of that national funding formula for this borough. And we'll stand firmly shoulder to shoulder with you in lobbying government, as we always have, in order to protect the budgets of this council and to avoid the crisis which is emerging. So for that reason, despite the fact that the gesture politics in this motion is as likely to succeed as Marcus Luck was in his what he was saying to Joe Grimmond all those years ago, we nevertheless support representations to council and a campaign to increase funding. That is necessary to avoid the impending crisis that is facing our borough schools.
Thank you. Councillor Dia, would you care to speak?
Thank you. It's quite remarkable this evening we see the opposition trying to rebrand themselves, but when it comes to election times, when it comes to speaking with the public, general election last year, we heard nothing from the opposition, nothing from Greg Hands in terms of cuts to education, cuts to our schools, particularly when schools in Hammersmith and Fulham and RBKC, Westminster and others in inner London are the ones that are going to be worst affected. Now, I totally agree, there needs to be more money spent outside of London in schools, but as Councillor McMillan has said before, you don't rob Peter to pay Paul. Education is something which enhances economic growth. By cutting it, we're damaging the future prospects of our economy. So invest in our education is a great way of achieving economic growth. And so I don't buy the argument that following the great global recession, that is the reason why we had to cut education. That's precisely the reason why we should have been investing in our education. Now, speaking on this motion with three hats, one as a local representative, two as a governor, but also three as someone who has worked in education, have worked in education for 7 years. One thing that really strikes me is every governor's meeting, there is always conversations around the budget and where money has to be saved. It's quite telling that there was a majority of us here who are governors, and I think there was only one on the opposition. Well, I'm not going to get into that. But what we should...
There's a good reason for that, though, isn't it? Because you don't allow opposition to go and speak to you.
Yeah. But anyway, in those governors' meetings, it's always talking about cuts. And what one of the... Having worked in education as well, one of the things that really concerns me is where these cuts often fall. And it's not necessarily in frontline teaching. It's in the support. It's in the services and support around teaching, the pastoral care, counsellors, whether it's in student support, careers, all that type of thing, which are seen as easy ways to get rid of money and save money. And often there's members of staff, support staff, who aren't on the same contracts or working arrangements with their school who are easily let go of. And it is a shame we lose so much talent. And it does concern me, coming from a pastoral perspective, seeing how these cuts are affecting our young people's mental health. And if we've seen a huge increase nationwide in the use of exclusions, it's just an indication of the fact that there is not the services there to support those children who need that additional care. It also worries me that there's those students with special educational needs who are also being let down. In many circumstances, schools aren't able to meet the needs of those children. And again, some of those students who should not be excluded because of their needs are being found to be excluded. So I'm glad there is some support. It is not just gesture politics, but it's something that we need to speak loudly and clearly and send a message to government and campaign locally with our school staff, with our parents, and with members of the community to really change this for the better. Thanks.
Thank you.
Put some time into the situation, sum up.
Councillor Jones.
Councillor Jones.
Thank you very much, Madam Mayor. I'm conscious of time, so I would like to get quite succinctly to the point. It's been a little while since I've heard one of Councillor Loveday's long stories, and I think to those uninitiated on this side, I would like to interject some facts of politics after the excellent speech by Councillor Culhane and that by Councillor Diarth. So, in terms of cuts, right, there is currently a Conservative government, formerly a Conservative coalition government, and I'm always pleased in this chamber when we have a little bit of economic literacy. The government, as pointed out by Councillor Culhane, talks always about cash increases in spending. The reality is we have 8% of cuts in real terms. Now, the politics of this, very simply put, is that we are all responsible for the schools in this borough, and that is 8% of cuts after a declining level of funding from this Conservative government and previous Conservative governments for the best part of a decade. Okay? And there are choices in government. This is a political decision. The Conservative government in the public sector finances could not, spend billions of pounds staying in government by directing that at the beck of the Democratic Unionist Party. It could, for example, not be suppressing economic growth by about 1 to 1.5% by pursuing a chaotic Brexit with no plan and no contingency planning. And even if you did support Brexit, which I do not, you could not make more of a dog's dinner breakfast of the planning process, which is having a further negative impact on the tax receipts. So there are choices in the public finances. Contrary to Councillor Loveday's, cuts are just this thing that come down from upon high as if we can't have any effect. There is a Conservative government, a Conservative Chancellor, who is choosing to reduce funding to schools in this borough. I would encourage any members of the opposition who wish to take a tour of our schools and look at the state of the buildings and the infrastructure and the need for investment. The UK has, I believe, the youngest on an international survey teaching population in the in Western Europe or any of the G20 economies, because people do not stay in teaching. In part, that is a financial pressure related to the cost of living in this city and in the southeast in terms of housing and all the things we know that drive people out of teaching. So we have excellent teachers in this borough delivering excellent results despite this context of public sector finance reducing the level of funding disproportionately to schools in this borough, as has been explained in terms of the geographical formula by Councillor Culhane and Councillor Diarth. So this, to sum up, is not gesture politics. This is about very real economics and very real political choices by the Conservative Party, which you should be condemning, and you should be standing up for the schools in this borough. It is your government doing this. Do not take us on a wild goose chase about, oh, we're just against the cuts and actually we could make representation. You know, represent your own party and stop real terms cuts that are likely to damage the future of the children of this borough, undermine our education system, despite the magnificent efforts of our staff and teachers in this borough. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Taking time into consideration, I now call Councillor Culhane to sum up, please.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Interesting story. It sounds like this luck guy, whoever he was it must have been, I hope you didn't have to share halls with him as well. I would have to say, though, I appreciate there's, I think, some lukewarm support to lobby the government, but don't ever dare accuse me of gesture politics on this topic when you're not the one sat in front of head teachers who you've never met before who are crying in front of you because they're having to decide whether they have to sack teaching assistants who have been there for 30 years just so they can afford an EAL teacher. And it's not just school funding that's the issue. I mentioned head teachers marching on Downing Street. Today it was colleges marching on Downing Street. Years ago it was Sure Start marching on Downing Street. Early years funding, every element of education your government touches, you are trying to pull the wool over people's eyes. I think in most politics, most rational people agree on two things about politics: the NHS and education. Both of those two things are sacred. The NHS, because we're a decent society. Education, because it's the best economic policy there is, full stop. And what you're doing by brushing it off as some sort of gesture, lefty politics, here we go, here's Larry talking again, just whatever. What you're doing is saying to the kids of this borough, do you know what, I had it, you can't. So if you're serious about this, support the motion and work with us. Madam Mayor, you're a sensible person. If you wonder why there's only one member of the opposition on governing bodies, perhaps you've just been enlightened. If you're serious about this, support the motion, lobby your government, lobby your MPs to properly fund our schools. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The main question, is the motion agreed?
Yes.
Yay. I declare the motion carried. I will take the amendments circulated before the meeting as moved and seconded and will now move to the vote on the tabled amendments and motions. Motion two. An amendment has been circulated. Is the amendment to the motion agreed? Pardon me?
Withdrawn.
Number three.
Withdrawn.
Number eight.
Withdrawn.
And number 10.
Withdrawn.
Thank you very much. That is the end. Sorry.
No.
I am very urgent. Sorry. That was really big. Right. 7.1. Information reports to note. Annual report of the Chair of the Audit, Pensions and Standards Committee, 2017-18. I call upon the Chair of the Audit, Pensions and Standards Committee, Councillor Cassidy, to move the report.
Formally moved.
Is the report noted?
Noted.
End of meeting. Safe home.